It's time for Twit This Week in Tech. My friend Mike Elgin sitting right next to me. He's in studio. Daniel Rubino from Windows Central. And aloha from Hawaii. It's Doc Rock. We will talk about Elon Musk. He's a big old troll. He also now has a controlling interest in Twitter. What's he going to do? Should be interesting. The Worldwide Developers Conference is coming up for Apple. What will they announce? And the Battle of the Pixels on /r/place. It's all coming up next and a whole lot more with Twit.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twit, This Week in Tech, episode 870, recorded Sunday, April 10th, 2022. Kim Apple says, good morning! This episode of This Week in Tech is brought to you by Worldwide Technology and Intel. With an innovative culture, thousands of IT engineers, application developers, unmatched labs, and integration centers for testing and deploying technology at scale, WWT helps customers bridge the gap between strategy and execution. To learn more about WWT, visit wwt.com/twit. And by Mint Mobile. If saving more and spending less is one of your top goals for 2022, switching to Mint Mobile is the easiest way to save this year. Get your new wireless plan for just $15 a month and get the plan shipped to your door for free at mintmobile.com/twit. And by Stamps.com. Stop overpaying for shipping with Stamps.com. Sign up with promo code TWIT for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, free postage, and a digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. Just go to Stamps.com, click the microphone at the top of the page, and enter the code TWIT. And by IT Pro TV. Give your IT team an engaging IT development platform to level up their skills. Volume discounts start at 5 seats. Go to itpro.tv/twit and make sure to mention TWIT30 to your designated IT Pro TV account executive to get 30% off or more on a business plan. It's time for TWIT This Week in Tech, the show where we cover the week's tech news. And this time we had to bring in somebody on the Windows side and on the Mac side. So we have, and then Mike Elgin, you're in the middle.
I'm against everybody.
Mike Elgin's here from Elgin.com. He represents the DMZ, the neutral zone.
That's right.
It's great to have you in studio. Morocco.
Yeah, just got back from Morocco after 2 months in Morocco. It was a wonderful trip.
Watching all your pictures. Of course, Mike and his wife Amira do the Gastro Nomad Adventures, and Morocco was your most recent. So yes, we'll find out all about that in a bit. I see you've also brought a beverage.
I have.
So we will find out about that in a bit. But let's introduce the guys who can't drink with us. on your left, representing the Macintosh contingent, Doc Rock. YouTube.com/Doc Rock. Hi, Doc.
Thank you. I am very Mac heavy, but I am actually bisexual. Have been bisexual since the very beginning of time because I have a CNC and a laser machine. So,
oh, you have to be bisexual. Yes,
but I am probably about 90% Mac size.
I pretend that I use Windows.
You're bisexual. Yeah, okay. Curious. Right.
It's not my favorite thing in the world. Daniel Rubino uses it joyfully, doesn't he? From Windows Central, he's executive editor over there.
I do.
Or, see, I'm starting to think Paul Theriot is using Windows because it's his career, not because he had a choice. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. I think that does kind of feel accurate as well. I don't know.
It's hard to choose Windows these days. Microsoft seems to be kind of actively annoying its users. I'm sure that's not how they see it.
I think that's even the less than 1% users who are complaining. I think most people are actually pretty fine. Windows 11 has actually been very successful for Microsoft, but there are people who complain.
Absolutely. Yeah. It looks good.
Well, they're better looking than us, so that's all that matters.
Yeah, it's good looking. It's a good looking OS. Although I had somebody call me on the radio show yesterday and said, I cannot install Chrome no matter what I do. I just got the Surface Book Go, and it won't let me install Chrome. And I said, you wouldn't by any chance be using Windows S 10S He said, oh, yeah.
Right.
He said, oh, well, let me walk you through it.
Let me break it to you.
Let me break it to you. No, you can't.
But that's it.
I had to explain, it's easy to turn off because actually you have a full Windows 10 machine. Right. It's just a setting. Yeah. Where do I go to set it? Well, you would think the control panel, but no, you go to the Windows Store and you push a button that implies you're going to buy an upgrade to Windows called Windows 10 Pro. You press the get button and suddenly now you're normal again. It's very confusing. That is not a good...
I didn't find it confusing. I thought they made it so much simpler recently because it gives you the pop-up menus and you just follow, and you're like, all right, click that and it goes to the store and you're like, can you click something else? It's like, it's less than 60 seconds.
But you understand why people...
It doesn't require a reboot anymore.
You understand? Yeah, I know. It's because it's really, I think it's just probably a registry key.
It's relatively confusing in the Windows context. They're far I just feel more like, confusing things.
Right.
This was always a problem with me with podcasting was... You would have to go to a store and press a button that said subscribe. And I think that probably slowed down podcasting because people thought, well, what is this going to cost me?
Right.
And so I think going to a store to do a free upgrade is a little problematic. But anyway, look, believe me, there's problems on all sides. All sides. We have awful people on both sides. but there is none awfuler than Mr. Elon Musk, the new owner of Twitter. Well, at least he owns the lion's share of Twitter, more even than Jack or Biz or Ev. He's got more than 9% of Twitter. Kind of interesting. Elon's been slowly buying it up since January.
Since January 31st, yeah. And he's going to be on the board. And this is the thing that I think is underemphasized in his essential takeover of Twitter, which is that there's a lot of mousy, sort of like nondescript people on the board. And then you have this bigger than life personality, Elon Musk. And he's just going to be running roughshod over the board. He's going to, and this is my biggest fear, actually, that he's going to use it as his personal plaything. He's going to mess around with features. He's going to use it to troll the SEC. He's going to do all these things that are for him personally. I don't know that he's going to do that. There's no evidence, but I just feel like, why else would he want to be so involved in Twitter suddenly as a company?
The information even said, oh, just go ahead and do it. You know, you're going to make him the CEO. It's not unprecedented.
Well, the dead giveaway was him saying, oh, I'm going to bring out the edit button. And then Twitter have to go
seconds
later. We've
been
talking about this for years. Relax, people.
and we're going to do it. They were kind of, I think, Agrawal, the CEO, the interim CEO of Twitter, I think, was at pains to say, oh, no, this wasn't because of Elon, but it was right after Elon's poll. He's not stopping there. Look at Elon's Twitter. It goes on and on and on. Here's the most recent. This is from Elon, the fourth grader. Should we delete the W in Twitter? And there's only two choices, yes or of course. By the way, yes is winning. that's obviously jokey, but then you have to wonder, you know, how much is of this is jokey? Convert Twitter's SF headquarters to homeless shelters since no one shows up anyway. Now, if you're on the Twitter team, if you're an employee, I might say that's a joke. You might say, uh-oh.
Right. Well, he does extreme things. I mean, he really does them with his other company.
I don't think he's going to turn it into a homeless shelter.
No.
But it could be a shot at people who aren't working from home, right?
Right. But again...
I think that's what it was. Yeah. It's the whole idea that he's kind of upset that people aren't showing up, you know, for their work from home. Because a lot of companies are obviously refining their policies now. I find, like, the problem with him is, like, there's no repercussions for his actions. And that's what happens when you're very wealthy. You have a lot of power. A lot of people on Twitter, you know, follow him and respond to him and want to be part of his orbit. And when you're that powerful and you don't have repercussions, you can just go and act the way you want to act. And no one's going to kind of stop you. And that's, you know, the tweet about, you know, is Twitter dying? He says, because he cited like the top three people who are followed on Twitter and how little they tweet.
Right.
And like anyone who knows anything about social networks realizes like, that's not how you analyze a social network in terms of growth, which is monthly active users and monthly active growth and new subscribers, how Twitter Blue is doing, you know, all this, like there's all these other metrics that he could be using. And instead he comes from this other angle. And it's just so like, this is going to be the person in, you know, not in charge, but, you know, trying to run the show here. It's just kind of disturbing.
Let's be clear. Elon Musk is a Twitter troll, and all this stuff about him joining the board and buying, you know, the money he spent to buy up
$3 billion
9.2% of the company is nothing to him. I mean, it's less, what is it, 1%?
It's about 1% of his total wealth.
It's really nothing, and it greatly amplifies an already amplified Twitter account.
By the way, the stock price went up 27% when it was announced that he had purchased this amount, and he could have just sold it and made $1 billion,
right? but I mean, as Dan was saying, that there's all these metrics that you normally use to judge the impact of a social network, but the one that especially applies to Twitter is the fact that all the media is on it, celebrities are on it, Justin Bieber notwithstanding, who's only
here's the tweet. Top 10 most followed Twitter accounts. Most of these top accounts tweet rarely, post very little content. Is Twitter dying? Barack Obama. Well, he's not president anymore. Justin Bieber. I don't know. Katy Perry, Rihanna, Cristiano, Taylor Swift, Lady Gaga. Elon Musk is number 8. He's tweeting to make up for the top 7. Narendra Modi, the premier of India, and The Ellen Show. But he says, for example, Taylor Swift hasn't posted anything in 3 months, and Justin Bieber only posted once this entire year. But is that a problem? I don't know.
The problem is that all these other people who don't tweet have more followers than he does, and that's the problem.
Oh.
They're also just, they're PR accounts, right? These are accounts that are run by PR agencies. It's not like Taylor Swift's actually on Twitter. Maybe she is.
I might say there is a problem, because anybody smart like Taylor Swift, who has to manage her reputation carefully, is probably reluctant to tweet. Nothing good ever came out of a tweet. Elon's the poster boy for that. Maybe what he's saying, Twitter's dying in the sense that people are reluctant to use it because of trolls, mischief, all sorts of stuff that can happen when you tweet, you know.
That's a very positive outlook. I would love that to be the case. The funny thing about Twitter is everybody uses Twitter. A lot of us use it for our job. Mike was accurate, right? It's a lot of news and media journalists. We have to use it. But then everybody seems to also hate Twitter. And so it's this weird thing. Everybody hates it. Half the people want an edit button. And now they're finally getting an edit button. A lot of people are like upset that there's going to be an edit button. A lot of news people are upset about it. And it's one of those things, like, no one's really happy with Twitter. I'm not sure how to solve anything on there, you know, with the harassment. It's like, if you want to address harassment, you have to talk about what a lot of people call censorship, but I would just call rules of the platform and, terms of service. So those two things collide. So I don't know, Elon Musk, if he wants to control, trolling and everything like that, you're going to have to put regulations basically on the platform, in the terms of service. And that's something he seems very adamant against. So I don't know how this is ever going to get better, to be honest.
I fear that he will unleash the trolls out of a sense of, free speech or whatever.
That's how this all started is there such a thing as free speech on Twitter? Right. Maybe we should start our own social network. And then it was revealed after he tweeted that he had already bought. Now, by the way, this is not a controlling interest, but no one has a controlling interest. It is the largest single shareholder by a long shot.
Right.
Jack Dorsey only has 2.2%. So I don't know how it works in corporate governance these days, but having 9.2% of a company is a significant thing.
It depends also on the shares, right? Because there's different levels of shares. I know Google does this where there's like a top level share, and it's the share that like the founders hold. And one of those is worth more than a third level share because due to voting rights, which I think the third level doesn't even have voting rights. And so I know corporations can stagnate stack their shares in a certain way that some are worth more than others. I'm not sure if that applies to Twitter. So
it's problematic in two directions. In one direction, Elon Musk is essentially
Twitter, by the way, as far as I know, has one class of stock.
Yeah.
It's all the same common stock voting shares.
But if he's on the board and he owns 9.2% of the company, then he can have an undue influence on his own Twitter account. And even worse, his own Twitter account can have an undue influence on the company. So, for example, if he loses a vote on the board, he can just go crap all over the board, crap all over Twitter, affect their stock price, do the stuff that he, in fact, has done with Tesla.
He could do that without 9.2% of the stock.
That's true. That's true. But he may use his influence and his megaphone to be overly influential on the board to ram through features that
and
the rest of the
board. And he is going to use it for PR. I mean, that's the thing. He's going to use it to cover issues with the Cybertruck. He can easily silence tweets about, you know, Solar City messing up. I mean, Lord knows that battle was, you know, kind of messy and still not completely straight. People in California that went early on Solar City are still waiting for stuff. I mean, and we understand, you know, supply crisis, whatever. But like having a platform this strong, he can control the narrative of things like that. You know, that's the part that's crazy. And that also makes it dangerous.
We should, I mean, SEC did put strictures on Elon Musk, which he promptly ignored, one of which is that every tweet would have to be reviewed by an ombudsman before he tweets, and he completely ignored it. SEC was mad because, the one where he said, I have enough, what did he say? I'm going to buy back, I'm going to take Tesla private at $420 a share.
That was in
finance. He's already got the financing for this, which is a lie.
Right.
And then the stock promptly went up, and so he made money on it. In fact, this whole Twitter thing, according to the Washington Post, may have made him $156 million because he broke the SEC rules about disclosure. He was 11 days late in disclosing that he surpassed a 5% stake in the company. And by doing so, could have benefited it with the stock rise. In other words, bought it before anybody knew that he was a controlling owner.
Yeah.
And then the stock goes up and he sells it.
Right.
That's illegal, of course.
But why would he care? When in August of 2018, when he tweeted that and went through that whole thing, the SEC fined him $20 million and fined Tesla another $20 million. $20 million to Elon Musk is like 25 cents to you and me.
A rounding error.
Yeah. Or to me, anyway. And
that's why it's so bad when they give them these, which sounds like a lot to the public, so that way it looks like you did something, but you're not really doing anything.
Yeah, to you and me, $20 million is real, but not to him.
Yeah.
If you get a job, right, it's commensurate to your, you know, your experience or whatever, right? So, like, make the punishments commensurate to your wealth. Like, that was just dumb.
Yep.
So here's the question for you guys. Do we give him a pass because of what he has done, which is remarkable with Tesla and SpaceX? I mean, he has single-handedly put EVs on the map, and now that the Earth is burning, and we're very glad he did, right? Mm-hmm. SpaceX just put 4 non-astronauts on the International Space Station. Starlink is going to provide internet access to the whole world, maybe not quite as well as was suggested, but still.
Also contributing to global cooling because it's shadowing the Earth and satellites, but that's...
Hey, that's issue. Okay. We'll take it. Raising the Earth's albedo. So do we give him a pass, Mike?
Well, I don't like the fact that he's on the board and owning 9.2% stake, but it's his legal right, and so it's really not about giving a pass, not a legal pass. If the SEC doesn't have fines that actually curb law breaking and bad behavior, then that's our problem as
by the
as
way
last, citizens.
Last right? month, Musk asked the SEC to scrap the agreement.
Right. Yeah.
The agreement he wasn't really adhering to because he has not clearly been vetting his tweets with lawyers.
I do not respect the SEC, he said plainly on 60 Minutes a few years ago. This is clearly the case. I don't like it. Some people do like it. Some people love the fact that, you know, a loose cannon is on the Twitter board, et cetera. But I think
Twitter,
it's legal
for him, so is the best way to do pump and dump, which he has done again and again.
Right.
In February, it was announced the SEC was investing a stock sale by his brother. Remember the tweet he put out in November saying, hey, should I sell a 10% stake in Tesla to help the poor or to pay taxes or end world hunger? And the day before that tweet, his brother sold a bunch of stock.
Yeah.
So he did it with Dogecoin.
Yep.
He's done it with other cryptocurrencies. The Twitter for him is a fantastic vehicle to make money. The irony is I don't think he does because I don't think he cares about it. He's got plenty.
Right.
He's the richest man in the world. Yeah. This is crazy. Do you give him a pass, Daniel, because of the great things he's done?
I mean, he definitely has done great things when it comes to science and engineering. There's no doubt about it. Evidence is lacking for his ability to make social networks better. Now, in terms of giving him a pass, no, but I am a wait and see kind of person. So I'll give him a fair shot. I mean, it's not like I have a choice here anyway, right? We're all just kind of waiting and seeing to what happens with Twitter. It could get better. It could get worse. I don't know even how you measure if it's getting better or worse either, since so many people, you know, have conflicting views on it. I think the bigger issue is I just find it just bizarre that people talk about, you know, the issue of centralizations of the internet, right? Everything. And this is something the former CEO of Twitter was talking about, you know, this idea that everything is centralized and controlled by corporations. And here we have a billionaire who just kind of does whatever he wants and buys up things, and it doesn't matter if it's good or bad. And then people keep looking up to these people as if they're going to save society. And I'm not sure that's the appropriate way we should be running things. I'd rather have a more grassroots, actual people involved, because fundamentally it's anti-democratic when you just have one person with so much wealth and capital and influence determining the direction of something as, you know, as important as Twitter is in terms of news these days, and who knows what comes next. And I think this is just a but people love it. They want to say they're for democracy, they're for more equality, but then when it comes to worshiping a billionaire, you know, they get wrapped up in this idea that he really is like Iron Man when he's not. He's just another flawed human being who's made some amazing decisions and done some great things, but at the end of the day is still just a person who maybe is not the right person for every single job on the planet.
Doc Rock, do we give Elon a pass?
No. Hard no. I'm with Daniel to some extent on the wait and see part of it. But I think the concept of, okay, let me fix this. Of Americans in general, probably more global population than just us, but I can speak to the people that I see. We really have to stop looking at other people to be heroes. When people ask me who is the most inspirational person to you, I give them the answer that most people hate. I go, me. Why? Because I start worrying about stuff that I can control, right? I'm not looking to anyone else to make the world better. I'm going to try myself. And man, I don't know how good I'm going to do, right? I might be that one splash of red dye in a gigantic pool, but I'm going to try. You know, I don't know any better. I'm going straight foolish. I'm going to try to make it better. And if I did that, and I know you're already doing that, Mike's already doing that, Daniel's already doing that, we could actually affect change. Waiting for one magical person to go sprinkle some, what is it, X, whatever I can say, AX33 level dust on the world to make it better, it's never going to happen. We have to take responsibility for ourselves. So I don't want to give them a pass because we've been giving too many people pass enough as it is. So how about we just try to fix things ourselves?
It's pretty clear that Elon is exactly your worst case nightmare of allowing people to get so ultimately rich that there's nothing anybody can do about them.
Right.
And it's, you know, this is straight out of the Marvel Cinematic Universe or DC Comics, where you get this kind of trollish behavior out of a guy who's, what if Stark Industries also you know, rob banks? I don't know. I mean, it's just, it's kind
At least Bezos looks like Lex Luthor.
Yeah.
Look like.
I think billionaires are a big problem in dealing.
Yes.
Now, by the way, if I were on the board, I'd be a little terrified at this tweet from Elon on April 7th. Twitter's next board meeting is going to be lit. And there he is. This is him on Joe Rogan smoking a blunt.
Yeah.
That is simultaneously horrifying and
refreshing.
It's bizarre.
It's upsetting because I mean, you never provide us with weed. So
no, but you do. You did bring us some.
Yeah, it's the next best thing, I suppose. But but I love the direction of this conversation. This is the right conversation. Elon Musk himself, as a person, I think, is a very laudable person. He thinks way outside the box. He's clearly
that's
brilliant.
His strength.
And
yes.
he's like, you know, we can.
I think he doesn't believe this is a real world. I think he's totally in on this simulation thing.
Yes.
And that he doesn't really think they're humans outside his body. And so he's playing pinball because it doesn't matter.
And to a certain extent, the existence of Elon Musk in our world is some evidence. Kind of evidence.
That, he's Loki.
Yeah.
Clearly.
But it's like he personally, I think, is a laudable person. The system that allows somebody to amass $300 billion dollars and just do whatever they want and is not the best system. So I think we need to, we need to vote people.
Yeah. You know, essentially, to Mike's point.
Get the money out of politics.
There was a joke, we jokingly said that he might turn Twitter headquarters into a homeless shelter. And just to get back at them for not doing whatever is going on, for the same round and error that he bought Twitter for, any one of these guys could take what he would have bought Twitter for just to play around with. And instead of making a power play, he could have done something to help child poverty or actually done something to help homelessness or done something to help food deserts and whatever. So instead of taking your play money to buy a company so you can slap it around and be funny with your hilarious tweets, how about actually do something to affect change?
Well, Congress is considerably less than $3 billion. I mean, Congress you could buy for half that.
Oh, a tenth. Congress is cheap.
Congress comes very cheap. Seriously. Yeah. I'm actually being serious. If you put that kind of money towards lobbying, you'd get Congress to do whatever you want. I think Elon sees Twitter as a lever. I think he sees it as extremely powerful. And by the way, powerful in a weird way, because not normal people don't care about Twitter. It's only got 350 million active users. Normal people, Twitter, but it has an outsized, thanks to President Trump and all of those 10 celebrities before him, it has an outsized power in the media.
Yes.
And so if you want to control media, if you want to control the Overton window, if you want to control what people are talking about, what a great way to do it.
Well,
and I think Elon has seen this, knows it. And if you give him credit as a smart guy, then he's saying, well, what can I spend $3 billion on that would give me the most levers of power? Maybe this is it.
I went on a rant a couple years ago on this show about billionaire philanthropy. And my theory is that we shouldn't lionize this kind of philanthropy, because essentially, once you're a billionaire, $1 billion, $300 billion, what's the difference? Basically, you can't, how much money can you really spend and how much happiness can you get out of additional billions? You can't. So once you've bought all the houses and you bought an island in Hawaii and you have 100 Teslas or whatever, what's next? The only thing left for people like Zuckerberg and Bezos and Elon Musk is influence and power. And so usually they turn to philanthropy to do that. Bill Gates says, I personally like GMOs, so I'm going to just blanket the African continent with GMOs. He's done a lot of great things.
It's also how you revitalize, as Andrew Carnegie did, polish up the reputation.
Yes. But everybody,
I think that's what Bill Gates is up to.
Yes, but to a certain...
And then Jeff Bezos buys the Washington Post. Somebody in the chat room is saying, that's even more corrupt, except that he's not really making the Washington Post do his bidding.
Right.
Elon is this is a very direct, clear path to power.
The Washington Post part is an indirect path to similar kinds of power, because, now you really, you additionally have to take seriously what Jeff Bezos says, because he is the owner of the Washington Post. This is more
true.
Elon Musk is more direct. He's more direct about everything. I mean, everything he does, he goes straight for the jugular and really tries to tackle things that he's concerned about. But the larger point is, the humanity is always in these conversations and these disagreements about, should we do this? Should we do that? What's the best way to do this? What's the best way to do that? Everybody has an opinion, including these billionaires, and they use their billions to get their way on those arguments that everybody's having. And that bothers me quite a bit. And
it's not democratic.
No, not at all. It's the opposite.
We need to start calling billionaires oligarchs. I like it. Go ahead.
Yeah. And getting to the philanthropy aspect of this, it's really important because, like Bill Gates, he gets a lot of, praise for giving away his billions of dollars, which is good. But part of the problem is he has so much money, he's had to set up a foundation for it. And his foundation creates a bunch of bureaucracy. As Mike was right, it gets directed in certain directions and to policies he prefers and likes. But there's also corruption involved with it, because you're talking about so much money, they don't know how to spend it. A lot of money gets lost in the process. And so it would be much easier if that capital was never centralized in the first place. Like, they have so many billions that they don't know how to spend it all in one place. They can't just dump it into the market. They can't just solve solve homelessness because it's a systemic problem. So it's like, it'd be much easier though, if that wealth was just distributed amongst average people. You know, this is the idea behind what made America successful post-World War II, was a solid middle class. Well, what have we seen in the United States the last 30 years? The decline of the middle class. And when the middle class has enough capital, everybody is happy. Things are stable. But when you start deteriorating that and the capital gets concentrated in just a few hands, and then they don't even know how to spend it, that's where you really start to get a lot of these problems. You know, this is, we can't have oligarchs, basically. We just can't have this kind of system. But so long as people love them and worship them and feel like in their head that, oh, someday that could be me. I mean, you bring up Stark, you know, in this, the Marvel universe. But what made Stark so interesting as a character was he was completely flawed as a selfish human being who didn't care about human life. And the way his character evolved, you know, changed that. He developed a moral compass towards the end, and that's what made him such a fascinating character. Problem with Elon Musk, there's no sign whatsoever of a moral compass. It's all just numbers and abstractions away from that. I think that's, you know, that's what bothers a lot of people. There's no sense of an actual vision.
Well, unfortunately, he does have a moral compass and a vision, but it's not necessarily a good one. I mean, he wants to put 1 million people on Mars. And he's even said that the problem with population is that it's not, the human population isn't growing fast enough because he won't have enough people to send to Mars. I mean, it's just, this is a vision. This is a moral compass,
right.
But the moral compass is just spinning basically. And this is the fear that, you know, what will he do to put 1 million people on Mars? Which is, to me, an objectionable thing. He probably wants to terraform Mars. I don't really like that either. So, you know, he should have a voice like everybody else, but he shouldn't have, in my opinion, I would prefer that he didn't control the most important place where people exercise their voice, which is Twitter.
Yeah. Actually, the person who should most be afraid is that kid who's tracking Elon Musk's jet.
Yeah.
Because the very first thing Elon's going to do is ban him from Twitter. He couldn't buy him. So now he'll ban him. It's just fascinating. I feel like we're living in this kind of weird story land.
Or a simulation.
and it's just, it's fundamentally anti-democratic. And I think that there's a problem in this country where we get tired of the democratic process. Mm-hmm. We want things to move faster. We don't necessarily agree with the decisions that are made. And so we kind of like the idea of a strong man.
Yep.
And I think Elon is playing to this. And
that's what populism is. And I also fear that he'll want to be president one day.
That's, I think, I hate to say it.
Yeah.
I think that's where we're headed.
Yep.
We are definitely on the path to more quote unquote, in air quotes, celebrity presidents.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Well, we had Ronald Reagan.
I was going to say, started at Reagan.
People want The Rock.
As is being said in the chat.
If you had a choice between The Rock and Elon as president, I would prefer Elon.
I would prefer The Rock because The Rock is a lot dumber. And he doesn't have a lot of ideas. He just wants to be
president.
Right. I think he would. He's
kind of like the last guy.
Exactly. Elon Musk would be like, now I have all the power. I'm literally going to do X, Y, Z. Whereas I don't think The Rock would really do anything. He would just be
Dwayne,
a mediocre president.
2028. Elon in 2028. I guarantee you.
The thing about Dwayne is, being from Hawaii, our cultural nature is to be nice. It's how we're raised out here.
And he's nice.
You can tell from the
nice
things that he's done.
Yeah.
He's a genuinely nice person. Yeah. The Aloha spirit lives within that brother. So
I wouldn't mind the Aloha spirit in the White House.
Remember the president in Idiocracy? He was a professional
wrestler. Somebody just said Terry Crews. Terry Crews. That's the woman.
That's where we're headed.
Oh, terrifying. What is the wine? Tell me about the wine before we take our break.
Okay, so can I tell you the occasion?
Yes.
Very personal thing for me. 17 years ago, my favorite podcast was posted on the internet.
April 11th, 2005.
Give or take. And so I think we should sell. We're leaving the country again. Before we go, I wanted to celebrate that with you.
April 17th. It's
April 17th.
Yep.
Yeah, and so that's in about a week. But I thought we should. And so we tried to find
anniversary. They my team was trying to talk me into cupcakes, balloons, a cake.
Yeah.
And I said, that's cheesy.
Yes.
You don't watch the Ellen Show and they're celebrating their 17th episode or something.
Yes.
It's cheesy. I didn't want to do that. But on the other hand, you bring some wine, I'm not going to say no.
17 is not even a legal adult. It's not even the age of consent.
That's right.
So in any event, this is we tried to find a 2005 wine in our cellar, a.k.a. Kevin's Garage. The closest we got was 2004.
It's okay. So, he has a hydrogen vehicle, so the garage does not
It's just a little puddles of water.
Yeah.
That's it. So it's a Domaine du Grand Tinel. This is a Chateauneuf du Pape wine.
From 2005?
2004. As close as we could get. And this is this winery.
I love Chateauneuf du Pape.
Yes, I know.
And Lisa's going to be here in about 3 minutes.
Yes, exactly. She's watching at home.
And she's going on. What, how dare you?
Exactly. So,
by the way, the chat room, always the constitutionalist, reminds me Elon Musk was born in South Africa.
Right.
He's not eligible to be president.
Well, he'll use his power on Twitter to change that.
Danger. Well, I remember Arnold Schwarzenegger for a while was talking about how can we change that.
I'd like
to
see him as president, actually.
He'd be fine, yeah.
Kevin, come on, get some.
I wish we could get you guys to join us. I'm sorry, Doc Rock and Daniel. Have that Laphroaig you were talking about or something else. Kevin Elgin is in studio. Come on, you can get one. The founder and creator of Chatterbox is in the studio, so
anyway,
thank you. That's nice. I wasn't even
congratulations.
Celebrate,
and yes,
I appreciate it. Happy 17th next Sunday.
Greatest
official.
Greatest podcast in the world, in my opinion.
Well, certainly the oldest. I'll give you the oldest. All right.
I lied. It's a Lagavulin.
Oh, look, but that's even better. That's
even better. Yeah.
Nice. Mm. I don't know. I think that the Chateauneuf du Pape might be better. That's quite delicious. Our show today, trust me, I'm still sober, so you're glad to be the first ad of the day. The show today brought to you by Worldwide Technology. Love these guys. And Intel. In fact, I've shared a glass or two with Chad and the gang over at Worldwide Technology. Really great company at the forefront of innovation. They work with clients all over the world to transform their businesses. You know, and enterprise technologies are a miracle, a remarkable thing. But if when you are buying enterprise technology, you don't consider your business strategy, your goals, and your plans, you're probably not going to buy the right technology. That's why I love WWT. They are totally focused on combining strategy and execution so that the technology you use in your enterprise matches your goals. It all begins for a WWT at their Advanced Technology Center, the ATC. This thing's amazing. Lisa and I went out there a couple of years ago to visit. It's the research and testing lab that brings together technologies from the biggest OEMs and the smallest. The people are transforming the space. More than $500 million in equipment in the lab. It started in one building more than a decade ago. It is now in multiple buildings, rack after rack of the coolest technology you've ever seen. And what I love about it, when we were there, I talked to the engineers who work in the lab. I said, you have a great job. You get to try all this stuff. They said, yeah, it's the best job. We love this. But what's cool, and I didn't know at the time, but shortly after we visited, they announced plans to make it open to all. So now the Advanced Technology Center offers hundreds of on-demand and schedulable labs you can run, you can do yourself, featuring solutions that include technologies like Intel Xeon scalable processors, Intel Optane persistent memory, Optane SSDs, everything representing the newest advances in every area of enterprise, multi-cloud architecture, security, networking, primary and secondary storage, and data analytics, and AI, and DevOps, and on and on and on. Now, of course, they use it, their engineers and partners use it to spin up proofs of concept and pilots to integrate technology so customers can confidently select the best solutions. And that makes a big deal in your evaluations and your RFPs. It really gives you a better sense of what you're going to get when you move in this new technology. But now you can do it yourself. With the ATC, you can test out products and solutions before you go to market. You can access not just the hands-on labs, but technical articles, expert insights, demonstration videos, white papers, all the tools you need to stay up to date with the latest technology. Because it's not just a physical lab space in St. Louis, it's now virtual. And if you join the ATC platform, you can do it for free right now. You'll be able to access all these amazing resources anywhere in the world, any time of the day or night. And while you're at the ATC platform, check out WWT's events and communities. There's always stuff going on. We actually did a panel that was streamed to all the ATC members. Lots of ways to learn about technology trends, to hear the latest research and insights from their experts. Whatever your business need, WWT can deliver tried and tested, scalable, tailored solutions. WWT, Worldwide Technology, brings strategy and execution together to make that new world happen for you. To learn more about WWT, the Advanced Technology Center, to gain access to all of these resources free, visit WWT.com/twit. Create an account on their ATC platform. You've got a partner, somebody's really there to help you bring your business forward in the 21st century. WWT.com/twit. Make that new world happen for yourself. WWT.com/twit. Thank you, WWT. We appreciate your support. We've had over 17 years, quite a few stand-up sponsors who've really kind of been there for this for us, and we are very grateful, really appreciate it. It's another way you can support us, by the way, and if you want to celebrate our 17th, I would love for this to be the best week ever for Club Twit.
Yes.
You've been on Club Twit. You and Amira, we did a great conversation about gastronomad adventures.
Yeah.
Club Twit is ad-free versions of all of our shows, access to the Club Twit Discord, which is great fun.
Yep.
It's a community, not just during the shows, but we talk about all sorts of stuff from, you know, food and wine to autos and hacking and ham radio, Linux. There's the Twit Plus feed as well, which gives you access to shows that we don't put out on the regular feed. Things like our untitled Linux show, the Giz Spaces. This Week in Space, and this is another reason we love having the club. Club members kind of made it possible for us to try out This Week in Space, and now Rod Pyle and Tarek Malik have brought that to the public, so it is available to the public now at twit.tv.
It's out of this world. It really is.
It is out of this world. We're going to do more shows because we can do shows without advertising support. When you're first starting out, it's hard to get advertisers, so that's what Club Twit lets us do. It's a great boon to us, and we think it's worth your $7 a month.
Can I make a point? Club Twit and an item in the rundown.
Yes.
Which is the new research that found that podcasting has a special, people have a special relationship with the podcast.
I saw that story.
Yeah. And basically what they were saying is that that podcast listeners are, I mean, I'm summarizing here, but they're less crazy than normal people.
They're less neurotic, they're, I think, is the word they use.
Neurotic. Okay, let's go with that. It's very clinical. They're not,
I don't know if that's true, but
they're
okay.
Not raving lunatics like the average
like they're
person.
Normal people.
But essentially, one of the points they made is that podcast listeners tend to form a parasocial relationship with the hosts that they
have. That's so true.
Okay, but here's an interesting point about Club Twit. With Club Twit, you take your parasocial means you as the listener feel like you have this close personal friendship with the host, mm-hmm. but the host doesn't have the slightest idea who you are. So it's a one-way relationship that feels like a normal two-way relationship to the listener. And this is true. We've all felt that with our favorite podcast hosts. So we feel like we know who they are, especially you've been doing it for 17 years.
Yeah.
A lot of us feel like we've known you for a long time. I mean, I started doing the show, I don't know, 10, 12 years ago, something like that. But Club Twit turns that parasocial relationship into a social relationship. Now you're interacting with people on Club Twit. Instead of them just feeling like you're somebody they interact with, even though you don't know who they are, you're actually interacting with people on Club Twit. And so it's really, that's a different relationship. That's not parasocial, the relationship you have with your audience on Club Twit. And it's very cool. It's a very intimate space.
Truthfully, from day one, the one thing I wanted to do, I knew from being in radio for years and somewhat in television too, that these relationships occurred. You know, you meet people who watch you on TV and they really do think they know you.
Right.
And it's kind of weird for both sides.
Yes.
But I wanted to break that fourth wall. I wanted to do with podcasting something a little less talking down to people or talking at people. I wanted more community. And it's always been a challenge. That's why we've always had a chat room. That's why I do talk radio, and it's why we have the club. It's to try to break that fourth wall.
Right.
So it's a community, not a speech. You know, you're not a member of an audience. You're a member of a community. And exactly. That's a hard thing to do, and I hope we're getting better at it. So, yeah, please join Club Twit, twit.tv/clubtwit, $7 a month. But you are all podcasters, every one of you. Doc Rock, you podcast. Daniel, I know you have podcasts at Windows Central. So I think you're all aware of that. It's a great medium, and I fear for it, to be honest with you.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, I mean, community building is something we've done extensively, you know, going back to Windows Phone Experts or Windows Mobile Experts back in 2007, all the way up through Windows Windows Phone Central and everything. Like we always, and I always made it a point whenever I wrote an article or an editorial or a review to hop into the comments and to talk to people. And I do that on the YouTube channel as well. And it's funny because a lot of people don't expect that. You know, you get the higher tier media out there. They write the review and they're like, I'm done and that's it. And then there's like, you know, 200 comments, which is great. But the reviewer never has to answer for the things they said. And I don't believe in that. You know, if someone makes a critique of my review, sometimes I may agree with it. Sometimes I don't. But I like to go in there and like have that discussion because that's how I learn. And I like kind of, you know, there's so much knowledge out there, especially from your own audience. And I know you know this, where audience sometimes surprises you. It's like, wow, you know. You've always had these like weird experts that pop up.
They show me
right?
up all you're, the time.
And so it's a great resource. I love interacting with people that way.
I completely agree. Yeah.
Some of the best friends are people that I originally maybe met in the, a parasocial type relationship, disagree with, but they were able to give me information that let me see light in a different way.
Yes.
And so, like, I've been building my community on a Discord for a minute. I was on Facebook at first, which was horrible because it's just an odd place to do community. It doesn't really flow as nice. But, like, that is my thing. Well, it's funny. My job title, I'm a community manager for a piece of software. So, I'm very, very big on community. People ask us all the time, hey, what's the best feature in Ecamm? Like, how is it different from XYZ software? I'm like, our community. It's not about cameras or mics or sounds or none of that stuff. It's the community. That's where everything lives. And one thing, Leo, you always had from the very beginning of Twit all the way to now, you've always had an amazing community.
I agree.
Right.
Yeah.
That's been one of the pillars of it, because you can find any group of nerds to sit around and talk story with you, you know, a couple times a week. But the community has always been on point.
Yeah. Yeah. And boy, if anything positive has come out of the internet revolution, it's this notion that anybody can have a soapbox and that everybody can talk back to them.
Right.
And so whether it's YouTube or Twitch or Discord or podcasts, and I want to keep it that way. And I have to say podcasting, I feel for a little bit because not just Spotify, but the big companies are kind of coming for us and they're buying up. All of the infrastructure stuff. And I feel like at some point, Apple, Amazon, Spotify want to make this theirs. They don't want RSS. RSS is too hard to track.
Right.
And so as you who listen to our shows, it's really important for all of us to really keep real podcasting alive. Just as, in a way, Windows Central is a look back to that independent blog, which was such a transformational thing 20 years ago, right? I want to keep that alive, too. And I think blogging kind of got co-opted a little bit by the big businesses and all of that
exactly.
stuff.
Exactly. And you know, the same thing happened with blogging that happened with podcasting, which is that, slightly different timing. So there were many, many years where I was the biggest cheerleader in the world for podcasting, and some hardcore fans were into it, but the general public
Nobody
was just kind of like,
it.
What?
Yeah.
I don't really.
Yeah.
And I kept pushing. It's like, come on, this should take over TV and radio. It's asynchronous. It's better. It's more intimate. It's more nuanced. It's more everything.
Mm-hmm.
And the public was kind of like, well, I don't know. And then it happened. And so you have this thing where you have the real podcasters like you. And then on one side of it, you have like professional radio, you know, NPR has podcasts, quote unquote.
I come from a radio background, so some might disagree with you on that.
That's the beauty of it. Your radio show is a radio show, and your podcasts are podcasts.
Yeah, they're different.
You don't do a radio show.
I wouldn't be drinking this delicious wine on my radio.
That's right. You have sponsors who don't want to hear that kind of thing on the radio. Mm-hmm. And then you have like people. There are people with podcasts who have like an audience of zero. I mean, it's like so many people have podcasts. So It's a really weird space, but I love
that was true with blogs, right?
Exactly. Yes,
that was absolutely true with blogs.
Mike been listening to my podcast.
Yeah, but that's fine. If you have 100 listeners who care about you and what you're doing, that's 100 friends. It's a community of 100. That's actually a big community.
Exactly. Yes.
Doesn't need to be massive. In fact, it's a disadvantage because then it's hard to have.
That doesn't bother me. What bothers me is the big companies that have, like, they try to move their podcasts off to some other, you know, Spotify or whatever, or who try to, you know, sort of have, you know, Slate Plus, for example, really bothers me. It's like they give you half the show and then, like, oh, if you'd like to listen to the other half
the show. Yeah, we decided not to do that with a club because of that.
Yes, yes.
It was like, you mean I don't get the whole show unless I pay for it?
But
no.
Once people see it as, like, this way to make money, they want to make more money and more money.
Money ruins everything.
And they're going to squeeze it. Yeah. So that bothers me. Yeah. But I love the real podcasts.
Yeah, I agree. And that's one of the things Spotify seems to be doing, which is, you know, what they did with Joe Rogan, what they do with every podcast they buy is taking it away from all of the open stuff and making it exclusive. So you have to have the Spotify app to listen to it. And I think in the long run, that's problematic. Advertisers love it because if you're listening on Spotify, they know exactly who you are. Right. They know what you do, what you for a living. They know where you live. And so advertisers can love that.
Yeah.
They can buy you specifically.
Right.
They don't know what they're getting when they buy this show.
Well,
we just had a great conversation about this on a podcast that I was guest on that's not published yet. So it was cool, though, because one of the things that we both talked about is longtime podcasters. The one thing that's missing is there's no real standard on podcast players, and there's no really good interoperability between players. So, like, back in the day when OPML was trying to be a thing, but there's just way too many players out there that each one can even wreck the experience of all the work you put into producing a good podcast. A bad player can ruin that experience a little bit. So I wish there, you know, like with TV standards, we have, you know, IES, EBU, we have, you know, like a certain loudness at full scale regimens that you're supposed to follow, looking at you, A&E television with the extra loud commercials. You're supposed to be at like -23 loudness at full scale. So it's nice and even across the board. That one station is not louder. Somebody needs to help generate a certain amount of standards so that everything comes off.
I'm against that. I like it. It should be a mess. Messy's good. No, I'm serious. Messy's good. You know, there's a movement, podcast 2.0 movement you might have heard about from Adam Curry's kind of behind that, which is he's got interesting motivations. He's trying to create a podcast directory that is not censored. That's job one. But then they want to do kind of new RSS features and so forth. And I'm just against too much. I don't want top-down anything.
Right.
We can't go back to RSS. Remember having to hand code those suckers?
Oh, that's fine. I enjoyed it.
Podler and Pear and these other things.
I did it by hand for a long time. Yeah. But I don't want too much top-down stuff. I think that's democracy is a good thing.
Absolutely.
I guess it's kind of related to our Elon Musk conversation earlier. Too much power consolidated in too few hands is anti-democratic. I'm against it. So let's not have any rules. Let's not have any additional standards. We have a good enough, simple standard that works well enough. Find the podcast player you like. You can listen to your show, Doc, and all of our shows on any podcast player, right? I mean, you know.
And I think the one thing that is cool, and I think a lot of new people, you know, like Mike was just saying, so many new people, right? Which in my community, we call muggles nicely. The muggles don't know that you can go through 7, 8, 9, 10 players until you find one that you really like. And that's okay, right?
Oh, they'll figure it out, I guess.
I think a lot of people just use what stock that they came with or had the nerd in their family set them up, and they don't, you know, go through.
Well, one of the reasons we have a website and we stream is for people who don't want to have a client.
Right.
Right. You just go to the website, click a link.
Somebody mentioned that in the chat. The one thing about clients is it'll fill up your device real quick.
Yeah.
Because you're downloading all these podcasts that you don't. Yeah.
Stream.
So streaming it. I like streaming it better.
I think to some degree, this whole conversation about Web 3.0 is a very related conversation.
Yeah.
And I think it's the wrong direction. I think it's also more centralizing, not less. Right. It's Andreessen Horowitz, the VC firm that's really pushing Web 3. They're saying, it's decentralized because it's built with blockchain. But it's not
right.
NFTs aren't decentralized. Everything goes through OpenSea.
Right.
This is the exact opposite. It's centralized.
They're waving the populist flag again. In order to control something that they can't now control.
Yep. It's weird when the powerful people with all the control are like going to set up a decentralized.
Yeah, right.
Because that's traditionally not how that stuff gets set up. It starts off at like developers and just regular people start building out something. Like the original aspects of the internet became that. So it's always I'm distrustful when very powerful people are like, oh, we're going to decentralize. Like, why don't we just decentralize everything, including your power, you know, and your influence with money? And like, oh, well, you know, they can't do that. That's too far. I don't know. I'm very skeptical of the Web 3.0 stuff. That's just not how this technology is or these systems are supposed to start. So
grassroots. Grassroots.
Regarding podcasting, though, the way podcasting currently is that it's about the content. It's about the hosts. It's about the content. It's about what you hear and see. And any innovation is going to be, oh, we'll have a button that does this, and we'll sort of have like, you know, other. It takes it away from just having it be pure content. I want to go on a long walk. I want to sit, play, and I want to listen to the podcast in reverse chronological order of the ones that I subscribe to. I don't want any algorithmic meddling. I don't want any sort of special features.
Yes.
I just want to immerse myself in the audio and the content, and you can't approve that.
Yeah.
Like that is so true. The only thing I do differently is for people who talk really slow, but they got great content, I do hit
speed
them
up.
On like
you
one
like
and
the
a quarter
up.
Or one and a five. But other than that, I'm with you, Mike. I like to just get in there and immerse it. But there are some guys who make great podcasts who just talk slow. I'm like, my brain don't do that. Because of Lagavulin 16.
I'll tell you a secret. I would say more than half of our audience listens at 1.5 speed. A lot. And when they meet you, they go, boy, you sound drunk.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, my God. But Andy at 1.5 speed, is like, whoa, that's way too much. You got to slow Andy down.
You're not going, he probably shouldn't be 1.5.
Right.
Lisa won't listen to a book. I don't understand it. She'll play her books for me or a podcast or any audio content. It's always at 1.5 at least. And I go, how can you listen like that?
Books I want at regular speed. I like listening to the podcast that I'm on at 1.5. I sound so much smarter and sharper when I'm talking fast. So
it's true. Very true. WWDC, Apple has put out the announcement. The invites have gone out. It will be online only, which kind of surprises me. What do you think, Daniel? Is Microsoft starting to do, is Build going to be in person? I think it is, isn't it?
Build is happening. It's actually not in person.
Not.
It will be again virtual this year.
E3 canceled. Probably not because it's COVID, but because
it's failing.
It's because it's over. They said we'll be back next year. But I was surprised. Apple says we're going to have a select few in the audience at Steve Jobs Theater, which means they'll probably do a live stream.
Call it Bring Your Developer to Work Day.
Is that what they're calling it?
No, that's what I'm calling it.
Oh, okay.
June 6th. They're going to have Hunger Games contest or something to choose.
I'm curious if Tim Cook will come out on a stage and there'll be a person and there'll be an audience, or if they'll be sitting there watching a movie of Tim Cook on a screen.
They're going to put him in chairs watching a screen like everybody else.
Yeah.
No, they'll be in the audience. They want some energy in the room, and if it's only Apple employees, that doesn't quite...
And they don't really like the press in the room because we tend to sit on our hands.
Yeah.
And they want cheers to erupt
exactly.
For the silliest little... possible
it's
thing.
North Korea, let's face it. They want
you said it, not me.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, Kim Jong-un. Good morning. No, that's wrong.
Kim Jong-Apple.
Kim Apple. Oh, that's a good
it's
name.
Tim Jong-un.
Kim Apple.
Kim Apple from now on.
Yeah, there's a show
Tim
title.
Jong-un.
Kim Apple.
Kim Apple.
Kim Jong-Apple.
Is Microsoft not doing any live yet? Have they not announced any live Ignite or anything?
Nothing yet. Build is May 24th through the 26th, I believe. I'll be online again, which is convenient for a lot of people. I don't expect them. I think the next events for them would probably be a Surface event in the fall, I think may happen. But, you know, with the whole pandemic stuff, right, it keeps changing dynamically. So I think companies are still a little skittish about
That's why.
Inviting people.
Because, we don't know what BA2 is going to do. It is starting to run through, rampant through New York and D.C. and, of course, internationally. So, maybe it's wise. Google said we're going to do Google I.O., their developer conference, mostly online, but there will, I think there will also be some in-person stuff. Online is good for, I think online's great for many of us because, remember, they used to have to have lotteries for things like Build and WWDC.
Right.
Right. Because there weren't enough seats, and so not everybody could get in. Now everybody can be a developer. Everybody can learn.
Right. And that the
audience
that's
online. You know what's so great
about
WWDC online?
What?
Is that they're one of the two or three players in the game that actually have a player. That sounded funny, but you know what I mean? Because of Apple TV, because of your iPads and things like that.
No, in fact, you can't watch it on a on a Microsoft Edge. You have to have Safari. Yeah.
So having a legit player, though, like, because I watched a lot last year from my Apple TV, and having the app and everything. Just
that's a
made
nice
the,
way to do it, yeah.
Made the experience so good, right? Now, we were live, you know, tweeting and yelling and screaming and saying weird stuff and whatever, as we tend to do during keynotes and things like that. But it is kind of a nice experience. I fully understand the pullback. I just came from a live in-person conference, and it was great to finally see some of my contemporaries and, you know, meet space and, you know, have fun and all of that. At the end, the last couple of days, everybody was walking around, okay, I'm going to go home and start sniffing. Like, what is this going to be like? So we were happy to get out, but then it was also a little bit sketch. So
that's what you miss, though, is that face-to-face, hands-on.
100%.
There's a certain amount of benefit to that if you're a developer.
Drinks
talking
at the
to
Chieftain,
the person.
Come on.
Well, it's, part of it's social, but there's even value to hands-on. So I don't know. I have mixed feelings about it, but I think it's probably prudent to be
on. The problem with the Apple events is that the hands-on portion is not that hands-on. They shuttle the press into a special room where you mostly looking at stuff through glass. I know I'm on the blacklist too.
A long time.
It's alphabetical, so I think I'm ahead of you on the blacklist.
Okay,
but basically they whip you into it. They whip the analyzing. They only invite the, you know, pro Apple press. Then they whip them into a frenzy. Then they send them into these rooms where they can maybe touch, maybe just look at close up the products they announced. And then they're gushing about it. Everybody's saying, look at me, I'm at the Apple event. It's a access journalism of the worst kind. And really, if Apple does have in the future, you know, a year from now, 5 years from now, if they do have a live audience, the purpose of the live audience will be to enhance the quality of the streaming presentation, because essentially the audience is a prop to show excitement for what they're talking about. It's also traditional, you know, back in the Steve Jobs days, the whole Apple event was an event. I mean, it was a big, big deal. And the audience, you know, people in the audience wetting themselves was part of the Apple thing. You know what I mean? It's like getting so excited about these products. And so to the extent that they have them, it's all about the stream now. It's all about the stream. If they have a live audience, it's to enhance the stream. If they don't have a live audience, it's because the stream is the only thing that matters. So it's really the larger world that Apple cares about.
Microsoft did have an event this week. The Future of Hybrid Work. Was that live, Daniel? Did you go to that? No, that was streaming also.
It wasn't in person, but it was online.
Panos Panay.
Yeah.
Did not announce any new products, right?
No new products. There's a focus on what is coming to Windows 11, how the company is trying to meet the needs of businesses as well as remote workers facing this new hybrid work model, and what they're doing to Windows 11 to make things better, basically.
I love it because I don't know if you know this, Leo, but I have a relatively newish newsletter with Foundry. It's weekly.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Called The Future of Work.
Oh.
And it's all about this kind of stuff. And I just was crapping all over the hybrid work concept. Right on schedule for the Microsoft hybrid work event. Would you like to hear my prepared statement about what's wrong with hybrid work?
So first, what is hybrid work?
Hybrid work is the idea that, so you have work in an office, the old-fashioned model where everybody goes into the office every day and works. That's one model. There's the remote work model where people are working from home or they're digital nomads or they're working in some far-flung place. And then the hybrid work model is like, oh, okay, we'll have some people coming into the office and other people not, or they have people coming to the office 2 days a week or 3 days a week. We might have this thing called hoteling, which is there's special software for this where you go and you check in and you're assigned
it's
a temporary
a hot desk.
All that kind of stuff. And so My beef with the hybrid work idea is that it's this thing that companies think is a panacea. They don't want people working remotely. They won't want them working in the office.
Right.
And yet the employees are like, there's no way I'm going to just work in an office again.
The hot desk is the worst of both worlds.
Yeah, exactly. Well, hybrid work is the worst of both worlds. There's all kinds of problems with the hybrid work idea as a panacea. I think it's
so here. Why are we doing it?
Because the companies
real estate
can't get what they want.
They already bought this office space. Is that what you're? That is, by the way, the conspiracy theory is. But they own all these buildings downtown. They got to do something with them.
Yeah.
But they could sell them, Daniel, or cancel the lease.
Some of the tech companies are...
they don't have to keep them.
Right. Some of the tech companies are buying up real estate left and right, which is, like, kind of curious.
Sure. That's WeWork. It's going to be huge any day now.
Yeah.
I love your... I love your illustration of the great return of the office. Joyless careers, hours of endless meetings. You've got an office worker action figure. Yeah, I like it.
Yeah. Right.
Sitting in a very old IBM. Or it actually looks like a Wang.
It looks like a Commodore 64 or something. I don't know what that is.
I feel like, and I agree with Mike on this, the term hybrid work, for me, it actually has two meanings, right? So you're right. There's this idea that a lot of companies are like, oh, you got to come to the office 2 days a week. You could do the rest remote. And for some people, that's a fine solution. But hybrid work could also mean just some of the workforce is remote all the time while some are in the office all the time too. So it can work, different ways. But, we face this with my, parent company, Future PLC.
They're in England,
there is
right?
a reluctance. Yeah, and they're very like, we like offices. We want people to work in an office. And Mobile Nations, the company they bought that we were a part
doesn't
of, was
like
100%
offices.
Remote. 100% remote. And we crushed it. Like, you bought us.
Yeah. Why do you want to change that? Who likes offices?
Right.
It's always the boss who likes offices and the workers who don't.
Right. They like to hold forth. Yeah. And they want to look and make a judgment about how people are and how they're working, all this stuff. Here's the problem with the hybrid work idea. So employees are saying, look, we don't want to come into the office. And employers are saying, okay, we'll do a hybrid work thing. But hybrid work is about location. It's about flexibility in terms of location. What employees want is flexibility in terms of time and when they do their work.
Oh, bosses don't like that.
Exactly. I want to work from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m., then not work for 3 hours. And whenever you try, the hybrid work is a desperate attempt to get people in the same place at the same time. But that's exactly what doesn't work for employers.
Industrial age model of work.
Yeah, exactly.
Where you're 9 to 5 because your job is putting widgets on an assembly line.
Right.
And that doesn't work for information workers. It's not even
years ago, Adobe and a couple other people started something called ROWE, Results Only Work Environment. What's his face? Jason from the old Basecamp team. Like, they're all
Jason
part of
Freed.
This.
So, yeah.
Jason Freed. Yeah. There we go. They're all part of this thing. And it showed effective. And I was working on it here. I had a co-working space here in Honolulu, and I was working on it here trying to get more people to do it. And everybody was super anti because people have this idea, if I let my people stay at home, they would just go beach, right? That's just a
clericalism. Not been my experience, by the way, at least the employees we have. They work just as hard,
if
not harder.
Oh, yeah.
And much, much harder. And the one thing that you free up, and I think people have realized this during, the situation over the last couple of years, when you don't have to wonder what your kid is doing at school or how they're doing or if they're safe or if they're still sick or is that fever getting on or whatever, you can focus, right? And so a lot of times to be able to just walk over into the bedroom and peep and see that they're getting their study on, doing their thing, and you can go back to doing your thing, it's fine. The people who didn't like it were the people with bad kids. That's a parenting thing. That's not my fault. If my parents had a work at home environment, we were never interrupting him in Zoom because we didn't say things like when mom and dad was working, you would be silent. That was just a thing. Yeah. So part of it, I believe, is a lot of the management people and the bosses, if you will, who feel like the other people are going to slack are the bosses who do the most slacking themselves.
Yeah.
Because they just think you're thinking.
They're projecting. They're projecting.
Right. You're projecting. That's the word I was looking for. They're projecting. And it's like people, it's always been stated, if you let people be people, they will normally do fine. When you give them the opportunity to be stuck between, I don't trust you, so I'm going to lean on you, they will do things to see what they can get away with, because that's the test. And proof of this in upstate Washington, a lot of places here, they have these stands, right? So you can go to a vegetable stand in Maui, and all the vegetables are there. There's a bucket. You pick up what you pick
money.
Up. You put your and you dig. And nobody's jacking vegetables. I'm sorry. They just don't.
I did that once for a Halloween. I was hoping I wouldn't have to hand out candy. I put all the candy in a bucket, and the front door was gone in a minute. So I don't know if that works. Maybe it only works in Hawaii.
Well, actually, that's what it works in. No, that stuff is all over Petaluma. People have like butter and eggs farms and stuff like that, and you just walk and put money in the jar.
For farms, for some reason, maybe because you kind of know how much work
it's those darn teenagers, those kids on your lawn.
Paydays, payday bars. I didn't put any money into that. The Babe Ruth, I didn't work
You know,
hard for
the funny thing, Mike, and I know you're joking, but the funny thing, if the teenagers are bad, whose fault is it?
Well, yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
So this ROWE, results only work environment, obviously it doesn't work for everybody. It only works for people who have a deliverable that you can measure. Like our editors, for instance. They either get the job done and get the stuff out or they don't. And we don't they can work from home if they could.
Right.
I mean, they need the they need the hardware and stuff, but we've set it up so they can work from home. But then there's kind of information workers. And Lisa says this, and I kind of agree with her. There's certain people, like people in marketing, you want them in the house because there is a kind of creative
and marketing types. People who are drawn to marketing are the kind of people
they're social.
Who, exactly. I remember working in magazines. Used to edit magazines for a living, and there was always this huge cultural and personality gulf between the ad salespeople and the editorial people. Editorial people wanted to do everything on email. The ad salespeople always wanted to have a call, right? Always on the phone, always talking, always social, always meeting. And the editorial people wanted to be in their own office, like, you know, and all this kind of stuff. But let me tell you something about this deliverables thing that I discovered in Morocco, which was really kind of fascinating. So Morocco.
You just came back.
Just came back
just
a few days ago.
Just did a gastronomad adventure in Morocco.
Exactly. There's a product that's grown only in Morocco called argan oil.
I love argan oil.
It's amazing stuff. Yeah. But it grows only in Morocco. There's a little farm in Israel and some other country. But basically, it's indigenous to
I had never heard of it. We were in Tangier. We bought some.
It's amazing.
And it was like, oh, my God, this stuff is the best
it's
oil
It's like a miracle
ever.
Oil. Yeah. So they roast it for food, and they... And then the non-roasted versions for cosmetics is totally blowing up for cosmetics in the last couple of years and so on. But we went to an argan women do this work, and they have these cooperatives. So we went to this women's cooperative for argan oil. And guess what, Leo? All the women were working from home. So the way they process the argan oil,
they've got a deliverable.
They have exactly. So they crack the stones with a rock. It's very hard to do.
I bet you it's labor intensive.
It's labor intensive, but they sit on the floor on a rug and they crack the nuts individually with a rock on between a rock and another rock, and then they separate the seed out, and then so what they're doing is they deliver the uncracked seeds to their homes. Then in their own time, they crack them, and then they bring the crack seeds back to the factory.
Wow.
So it's not about information work. It's about when you can measure the deliverable, it can be anything.
Did Adobe have success with Roe, Doc Rock? Did that work for them?
Oh, yeah. A lot of companies went that way and started that way. And, I mean, look at me. I'm in Honolulu. My company is in Massachusetts. We do perfectly fine. But I agree with Mike because I'm in marketing department. What do we do every day? We huddle on Slack. And that's our thing. Like, we have a good time because we get to hang out. And I go out of my way to try to visit Mass twice a year just to come in, not from the hybrid thing, but just to connect with the team, you know, have dinner with the crew, things like that. I did want to tell you, if you haven't seen it already, this is probably like 2 years old. Fantastic video from Business Insider about why argan oil is so expensive and it's so labor intensive in hand. But, oh, my goodness, it's awesome. It's very, very awesome.
And I should point out.
And I use argan oil every day for the beard.
Yes, if you think he has a sleek, beautiful beard. It's because it's argan. Thank you for
argan oil. 100%.
I never heard of it. I thought we were getting scammed because we went to the Medina and there's a guy who specialized in argan oil.
You might have been. So they cut it. They cut it in the Medinas. The pure stuff you get at the cooperative. It's just like heroin or anything else. But basically,
do they put baby laxative in argan oil?
Who knows?
I know if you go to the store and look for argan oil, 3%, 1%. It's not whole.
Right. But one little factoid. You've seen the photos of the goats in the trees in Morocco, right?
Yeah.
So what what they do is the goat herders work with the argan producers, and they have the goats go into the trees and eat the argan seeds, and 60% of them they spit out, and 40% of them they go out the other end.
Really valuable,
but either way, it softens the shell, makes them easier to crack. And so a lot of argan oil
you're
is actually
both ends
been
is what you're
processed
saying.
By a goat.
Oh my God! And the goats are in trees.
Yes, they actually go up in the trees and eat them directly from the trees.
And it's only in.
Only in a specific
Morocco.
Part of Morocco.
Wow.
Only it's near Essaouira, between Essaouira and Marrakesh. There's this argan area, and that's the only place where it grows in the world in any significant amount.
I can't
amount.
Believe Doc Rock knew all about argan oil.
Well, you saw his beard.
Man, that's what you got. Man, you got to keep the beard, and plus, that's how I stay looking young. Like, you know, I still look like a teenager.
You know, so the whole time I had it, I was putting on my cuticles, on my nails. It was great.
Yes.
And I have not found anything as good as that. Good.
Well, you know, Moroccans eat it for breakfast. It's the most amazing thing. They grind argan seeds with almond oil and put honey in it.
Ooh.
Those three ingredients.
Ooh.
And they dip bread into it.
Okay.
And it's the most delicious.
Yeah, I love Moroccan food. We have a restaurant here. It's so good, called Kanzaman, and they have the best Moroccan.
Is that where couscous
sandwiches.
Comes from? Is that
yes.
couscous?
Well,
couscous
it's from the Maghreb, so Morocco, Algeria, and Tunisia. Essentially, it's basically where the Berbers live.
The Berbers.
It's a Berber food.
It's a Berber food.
They
couscous.
Make dope carpet.
Yeah.
Yeah, dope carpet, too.
Oh,
Gastronomad.net. Look at the Morocco experience. You're going to be just back from the one in the spring. Now you've got two in the fall. One this year and one next year.
Yeah, the fall this year sold out.
Sold out.
But next year is not sold out.
And
so.
This is the longest Gastronomad you do. It's a 2-week experience.
2 weeks. Yeah,
because you move around.
We go to Chef Shawan, Fez, Marrakesh, Meknes, which is a wine country. We go in the desert. We go to Essaouira.
Nice.
So it's a really glorious. Experience.
What fun.
Yes.
What fun. And I know all these people.
Yes.
Who are testimonialing.
Yes.
Yes. What fun. So what did Apple and Microsoft, what did Microsoft announce at this hybrid? It's actually smart of Microsoft to say we're going to help you with hybrid work, because it is challenging for a business.
Well, everybody's
how
struggling
to handle
with
this. They were struggling with it. We're doing hybrid too. Some of us are here.
Yeah.
Some of us are still at home. So did Microsoft offer anything of value, Daniel?
No.
Okay.
Just kidding.
Thanks a lot.
Well, there it is.
Yeah, probably one of the more interesting things I think they did was in Windows 11, they're building in, like, if you see my background, it's blurred, right? I'm using NVIDIA GeForce, specifically NVIDIA Broadcast is blurring
my
background.
So you need a lot of hardware to do that. And actually, it's doing it very well.
Like, right.
Your hair, I don't see anything. That's we call it a key in broadcasting. It's a very, very good key.
Yep.
Much better than you get from Zoom or Google Meet or any of that stuff. Yeah, yeah.
So this is, I consider it the top of the line. But, yeah, you need a powerful RTX GPU to do it. So what they're doing in Windows 11 is they're building in the ability to automatically blur your background in video just in the operating system itself. It does rely on an NPU to be present, which, you know, we see a lot of in the ARM processors, although Intel is, of course, building out this technology as well. It can also do things with, you know, the voice and amplify the voice when someone's talking, including if they're walking away from the microphone or moving. It'll keep the audio level. And so you're seeing, like, a lot of the smart technology. TechCrunch had this very sarcastic. I thought it was kind of dumb. But, like, right now, like, I'm looking at the camera to make eye contact.
Oh,
and we all know this.
I know where you're going. I hate this. AI eye adjustment.
Right.
Ugh.
And so it's technically not new, right? Apple's been doing it for a while. The Surface Pro X by Microsoft has had this feature, too, for the last 2 years. So on Skype, it'll do it. It's actually very subtle.
Do you have it on right now?
I don't have it because I don't have it's not set up on this PC to do it.
Okay.
But with the Surface Pro X, you can do it on there. But it's a very subtle thing. So I think TechCrunch is kind of making a big deal about this, saying it looks unnatural. When I've used it, I mean, it didn't look unnatural at all. In fact, it was almost hard to see the difference. It was a very subtle change. But I think that technology, it's just like anything else. Even if it does look weird at first, just some tweaking will adjust that. But I think this is a pain to, you want to look at your screen. But then you get the camera above it. And so they're trying to just rectify
that. As long as it's
that,
not creepy.
Make it a little bit more natural.
What I've seen looks a little, there's something off.
Everyone looks like Marty Feldman.
Got Marty.
I don't know what
Feldman's eyes. So tell me
but
what.
That's like everything, right? That's like CGI too, right? CGI was off, but now it's getting to this point where it's,
Uncanny Valley, What? So tell me again what you're using, because we're on Zoom, but you're using something to pre-process the video from NVIDIA? What's it called?
Yeah, I'm actually, well, so the camera I'm using is actually a new one. It's called Lumina, which is a kind of a startup. I think they're out of Japan, I want to say. It's really interesting.
It looks really good.
It's the first. It's the first camera that I consider that could actually beat the Brio 4K by Logitech, which has been the long-running champ. But so I'm running, and they actually do their own blurring ability, which I haven't enabled because, so this is running through the computer, and I have a RTX 3080 GPU on here. And you just install, there's a free app NVIDIA puts out called NVIDIA Broadcast. You just download it to your computer. You technically can get away around it. There's like a way to get around the GPU requirement even. It'll probably use your CPU more, of course. But what it's using, it uses the GPU and it uses it to, it can blur the background. It's also doing my voice. So if I clap or hit
it dumped that out.
Yeah. So I don't even have it maxed out. I don't have it maxed out even. When my senior cat used to always come in on the podcast and she would just scream her head off, but you never would hear it. I would hear it.
But,
so it's using AI on the fly to do this. They keep improving it and they can do some auto tracking and all this other kind of stuff. And that's where you're seeing a lot of this like engineering going into computers. Lenovo has a brand new laptop, the Yoga 9i. It's a 14-inch laptop. And it has a button, a physical button on the deck that you can hit that will blur your background in any video app. So you can just be in any call and you can just hit a button and it will just blur your background on.
This is the best key I've ever seen done in real time on a computer, though.
Yeah, it's really, really good.
Doesn't it look good?
It looks great.
Yeah. So I have a 3080 at home. So I could use the NVIDIA broadcast on that with my Zoom calls. I'm going to blow people away. Wow, that's cool. And that's if you have an NVIDIA card, that's a free download, NVIDIA broadcast.
Yeah, it's just a free app.
I feel like people like hack it, so you don't. Because it looks so good.
It does look good. And now I'm going to have to look at the Lumina as well, which is only $199. It's less than the Brio.
Yes.
So I'm going to have to take a look at that as well. Wow.
They're really interesting because they're focusing. So the hardware is very good, but it's the software. It's almost like a Tesla. I own a Tesla. I'm sure some of you guys do too. But like when you bought the Tesla, like the way it evolved over 2 to 3 years through the software updates is what's really made it an interesting car. This is the same thing going on with this camera. They're focusing a lot on the software and AI, and they're going to be tweaking a lot over it for the next couple of months and years and stuff like that, where they're really going to kind of get the most out of it, which is really where cameras and optics are going, right? It is the power of AI that's really going to improve these things.
The only thing I would say, and I noticed this when you first came on, it's a little cooler than normal. Usually I'm warmer.
I'm overriding that.
Oh, you're overriding that.
I'm overriding that. So I could actually put it onto, I can change it right now and put it on scene and it'll auto adjust.
So Dan Rubino himself is cooler than
normal.
He's
a cool
cat.
He's
just cooler.
Yes.
He's a cool. But I'm even noticing on their website that the video that they show on the website is considerably cooler. That's the video on the left than the video from the Sony, which I think actually looks more realistic. So it's funny that they're putting that on their website.
They give you full controls over all that stuff, which is kind of nice. It's all sliders.
Yeah. So. Interesting. Oh, and it has active calibration. Look, she's holding up a card and it's calibrating. That's kind of cool, too. Look at this. Watch
I should try that. I actually do have
Does it come with a card or do you just have a grayscale or a.
No, I don't think so. But they're a cool company. Like, so I already changed. So this is when I put it on.
Oh, that looks great.
You can see it already.
That's 10 times better.
Yeah.
Go back to the other one. What was that?
I forgot which.
Delay, too many settings. He doesn't know what the hell he's doing. Yeah.
Yeah.
The warmer one was better. But that's just me. That's just me.
Yeah.
So I don't care. You can be as cool as you want because you are too cool for school. We're going to take a break and then we'll come back and talk about the rumors around WWDC as well. Great panel. I love having you guys here. Daniel Rubino is the man in charge at Windows Central. EIC, great to have you. Or sorry, executive editor. Is that different from the EIC? Executive editor. It's like even higher.
It's changed. I used to be the editor in chief, and then executive editor. But I'm just the. I've been there almost 15 years now.
Wow.
That's the foundation of it.
Yeah, you are the legend at Windows Central. It's great to have you on. Mike Elgin, who for years was editor-in-chief of Windows Magazine.
Yes.
Now is at Elgin.com. Where can we find your Foundry newsletter?
Just go to Elgin.com and you'll see every week I post it with some information on subscribing.
Okay. So it's like Substack kind of, it's a paid subscription platform?
It's free, but it's kind of an odd model. They do a sort of qualified. So it's not really qualified. They ask you questions. What do you do for a living? You know, all that kind of stuff. And then it's free. So
nice.
It's Foundry, formerly IDG. So it's...
Oh, it is. Yeah. It's IDG. Oh,
yes,
okay.
Yes, exactly.
And do you like their CMS? Is that part of the...
Basically, I just submitted as a, you know, submitted and they post it and it goes out and so on. And we're working to transform that whole newsletter thing. But right now it's email newsletter.
I love this picture. Street signs in the Medina and Fez. They will not help you.
That's right. You will get lost.
I think that's a safe bet.
Yes.
I have no idea what I'm looking at. Doc Rock is also here. He's community manager at Ecamm, which, by the way, is really great software for anybody. Oh, you got one of those. Look at that. Anybody wants to stream?
If the Sony don't calibrate, I got to reach back there and press a button.
And you're using the Sony. Which Sony are you using?
Right now I'm using a ZV-E10, but the bokeh comes from a Sigma 16 1.4. I also have the A7.
Oh, see, he's doing it in optical. It's called optical bokeh.
And I'm looking down a teleprompter too, right?
You have a teleprompter and everything? Wow.
Here, let me show
fancy.
You. Because it's actually super simple to do. I just hold up my iPhone just like this.
Yeah.
And I press over here.
Switches over to the iPhone.
See.
Look
so
at
that. There's all of the cool.
Oh, there's the chat room. Nice.
They're on the Mac Studio. So I'm wasting all of the studio speed for the chat. And then we're over here. Now we're going to create.
So the chat needs is a Studio Ultra. Is it an Ultra?
No, I got a Max. Yeah.
You know what? I'm glad I got the Max. We'll talk about that too. DP Review had a very telling benchmark between the Max and the Ultra. I thought was fascinating. Great to have you, Doc Rock. YouTube.com/Doc. Is it Doc_Rock or just one word?
Just Doc Rock.
DocRock.
Just about everything. ROCK.
ROCK.
ROCK. Yeah, K is worth the extra thousand.
In the USA. Our show today.
It's definitely the coolest name.
Isn't it? Doc Rock.
Compared to the rest of us.
I don't even know what his real name is, to be honest.
It's Sean. But the Doc Rock came from when I was a paramedic in the Army. I was also a DJ. And one of the nurses, she was a civilian nurse, but she was an older lady. And so she used to call me Dr. Rock and Roll. My original DJ name was Yogi. And I was like, that name is dumb. But Miss O'Hea calls me
Doc Rock.
It's incredible. So I switched it to Doc Rock. It's short for Dr. Rock and Roll.
But like P. Diddy, you could use Sean, but you choose to use Doc Rock. I like it.
Yeah, because there's just way too many of us. You know, the time I was born, everybody is named Sean. It was just whack.
Our show today brought to you by the single best way to do your cell phone, Mint Mobile. I've been telling people this for years. Why are you paying incredible, insane amounts of money every month for wireless when you could save so much by switching to Mint Mobile? It is literally the easiest way to save this year, and you can shop around. You will not find a better deal. How does Mint Mobile do it? They were the first company to sell premium wireless service online only. No stores, no overhead. They don't spend money on anything. Mint Mobile passes those savings along to you with incredible, incredible wireless service as low as $15 a month. And I actually saved because I got a Mint Mobile iPhone SE for $15 a month, the Mint Mobile service for $15 a month. So brand new phone plus service, less than $30 a month, which is a third of what I was paying for the same wireless service from T-Mobile. It's unbelievable. All plans come with unlimited talk and text. Yes, of course. You get unlimited talks and text nationwide, plus high-speed data delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. It's on T-Mobile. So now you know. If T-Mobile works for you now, switch 5G on T-Mobile with that ultra capacity. Mind-boggling. You'll get all of that. You could bring your own phone if you want with any Mint Mobile plan. Unlike everybody else, they'll even send you a SIM for free. Port your number over. You'll keep your same number, keep your contacts, or you can buy a phone from them as I did. They make it easy. With Mint Mobile, you choose the amount of data that's right for you. You don't pay for data you'll never use. Switch to Mint Mobile. Get premium wireless service starting at $15 a month. Yeah, 4 gigs a month, $15. Ain't nobody needs more than 4 gigs a month. That's plenty. You need 10. Okay, go knock yourself out. Now it's $20 a month. You see what I'm saying? Mintmobile.com/twit. Get your new wireless plan for just $15 a month. Get the plan shipped to your door for free. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month. Mintmobile.com/twit. This is the best kept secret for saving money. Everybody, I'm trying to keep it. I want everybody to know. Mintmobile.com/twit. Thank you, Mint Mobile, for supporting This Week in Tech and saving our listeners a ton of money.
I use Mint Mobile.
Sorry?
I use Mint Mobile.
Yeah, because you're smart.
Me too.
Yeah, because you're smart.
You know what's funny? Leo, was in San Diego at that conference.
I did. That's what I did. I bought a $300 plan for a year. Yeah. I mean, it was incredible.
Such it was a Black Friday special. When iPhone first came out with dual SIMs, I just wanted something to play with. And so it was a cheap way to play. And then I ended up liking it. It was funny. I was in San Diego last week. The AT&T service was just horrible. And then some said, oh, go on your phone and switch the thing to Mint. And it was ridiculous.
Yeah.
It was incredible.
I like the new. I have to say both Verizon, AT&T, and T-Mobile now are rolling out this mid-band 5G. And if you're lucky enough to be near a tower, unlike millimeter wave where nobody has got it, you have to be so close to a tower, it's ridiculous. Pretty much everywhere, or a lot of metros, I'm surprised at the places I'm seeing it. And I'm getting like 500 megabits down. It's incredible.
Yep. Wow.
It's incredible. It says UC on your Mint Mobile or T-Mobile phone. I think it says UW on your Verizon or AT&T phone. We did not yet say what the rumors were about June 6th. We will cover that, by the way. Micah Sargent and I will cover the keynote, whether it's live or on Memorex. We'll still be there to cover it. And the rumor is that, and this is brand new, hot off the presses from Mark Gurman, that they might well announce an M2-based MacBook Air, which increasingly I'm feeling like you're foolish to try to buy higher-end MacBook, spending $3,000 or $6,000. The MacBook Air is perfect in every respect. And it's just as fast single-core as every other M1. And I think Apple is maybe, I don't know. DP Review did a very interesting head-to-head between the Ultra and the Max. You have a Max. I have a Max at home. I'm not going to show this to Lisa, who has an Ultra. But they tried all of the photo apps that you might use, and they found, with the one exception, that there was just a minor bump going from Max to Ultra, $3,000 more in price, but a minor bump. This was the only exception, Lightroom Classic, where the Ultra was, in fact, twice as fast. Now, I know a lot of people use Lightroom. Yeah. Not Lightroom. Lightroom CC, you know, the classic edition. Right. But they looked at, you know, what I use, Capture One, minor improvements, like they said, barely generational, a few seconds. Most of the programs people use, not a huge difference. What is your experience, Doc Rock? Are you glad you got the Max, or do you wish you had the Ultra?
Part of me do wish I had the Ultra, but I got the Max because I know in the bottom of my heart that it will be finished by the end of 2022, means November is.
You're going to get a Mac Pro. Is that what you're going to get?
So I got a studio Max as a stopgap. But I also say I understand where everybody goes with this stuff when this stuff first comes out. This machine has been sitting on the desk for all of 2 weeks. I also know that every software manufacturer, once they have them in hand, not the development machines, but the real machines, they go in and they tweak. And somewhere around late June, July, especially after WWDC, with increases in, you know, Mac IDE platforms, they will fix everything and everything will work.
Well, so these reports are
100% true.
Yeah, but wouldn't you think with Apple, with Final Cut Pro, would have absolutely optimized it? And look at the differences between the Ultra and the Max.
I think they didn't have enough time.
Minimal.
I honestly don't think they had enough time. Because remember, we just got the Max in November. And I think they said we need to get this out before, at this right time, so, for money-wise. But we can fix Final. So I think a 10.7 FCP right after WWDC. And we'll start to see some improvements. also ancillary hardware that goes along with this stuff also needs to catch up.
Yeah.
And honestly, in the pro space, everybody's still Premiere, which only half but does it anyway. I was going to say a bad word.
Well,
only half does it anyway. So there's
Here's Premiere's benchmarks, and Adobe has made it M1 compatible. But you're right; they probably haven't optimized it for the M1. But again, very little difference in the Max and the Ultra. In fact,
Premiere just got M1 like lovability recently.
Yeah.
But even for Final Cut, it took it like 2 updates to catch up when we first got the M1.
All right.
And this Apple's thing. Once it was set, oh my goodness, it's glorious, right? So I think to your point about the MacBook Air, the tech verse, us guys, right? All of us sitting here at the table. We're a small segment of the normal populace. Like we're mostly talking to each other.
I ain't editing 8K video myself. So.
Right. So it becomes echo chamber.
Yeah.
But to the wifey and my niece and mother-in-law, stuff like that, they will love a M1 MacBook Air, how quick it is and what it does. And for what they're doing on a daily basis, they will be absolutely stoked.
Yeah.
And it's so funny that in our space, people like myself and my, Renee and you and whatever, we all get into this echo chamber yelling at each other about these benchmarks. And a benchmark means I scratched the table to her. You know what I'm saying? Right. I can't believe you scratched this family heirloom. That's a benchmark. Like, not how fast.
You mean a mark on the bench. Yeah, I get what you're saying.
On an actual bench.
Yeah, an actual bench.
Not,
yeah.
Not how fast my NVIDIA 1030 can do this, that, or the next thing. And I wish we would be more open to understanding when these companies make these changes. Like, it's only... We're a small segment, and I understand it does affect us, and I know we want things to be better, but like outside of me, nobody else in my family cares about Apple versus Epic. Not a single one of them. They have
they
no
probably
idea
don't even that. Know what's going on. Yeah.
Holla back. They have no idea what that means. Yeah. Right. And I'm not a small family. So I just wish we would understand that. And
well, I understand that, but we do shows for the people who know what Epic for Apple is.
True that.
Yeah, right? I'm not talking to your family at all. I bet you they don't listen.
I told them I was going
to
be on Twit, and it's like, what is that?
What's that?
Like,
yeah.
I've been Twit? Watching this
why
forever.
Would you want to be on Twit? By the way, good on Epic. Fortnite raised $144 million for Ukraine relief in just a matter of days, I think. They did a 2-week fundraiser, $36 million in the first day alone. Funds being put toward direct relief, the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, the UN Children's Fund, World Food Program. That's not alone, though. I mean, the game companies are just really stepping up. Riot Games did a bundle of 100 games on itch.io, raised $5.4 million. Humble Bundle raised $20 million. So gamers are stepping up.
That's more than the Russian military spent on communications equipment.
Probably.
Oh, those jacked radio calls are both interesting to listen to and a little bit freakishly scary at the same time. So
tell me about that, because I'm trying to – every time I turn on the TV, it's all about the war. And, I it's a horrific, horrible thing. I'm just a little fatigued, so I haven't seen all the latest. They're stealing Russian telecommunications?
Well, yeah, because their radios are
encrypted.
Very well
encrypted.
And then so these guys are like talking to their parents on some cases. Some cases. They're talking to their higher-ups, and the higher-ups are telling them to do stuff that they don't want to do. And they're like, no. And then the higher-ups are like, no, you have to.
No.
And these guys are like, okay, you hear the thing disconnect, the dudes walk away. Like, it's
awesome.
It's scary and it's upsetting, but at the same token, like, this guy's like, you lied to us. You said we're going to get money and medals. He goes, I don't even want the medals no more. I'm out of here. And the guy's like, no, wait, you do this or you're going to get in trouble. And click.
you've served nuts. In a combat situation.
Yeah, that's why it's scary and it's nuts. Because I'm hearing the commands that they're giving, because that's not what the people are being told. And again, there's nothing to do with political. Just throw all it out. Just be a human, right? Regardless of how you feel about anything, just from a human standpoint, to have somebody tell you to look somebody else in the face and do something mean when they're civilians, they're not part of the game. Like, that's been the rules forever. Civilians are off freaking limits. Right now, have we done dumb stuff before? Absolutely. Right. But we don't go out of our way to do it, in theory.
Yeah.
Right. So we're told. anyway. And so I guess I understand hearing the guy listening to the higher ups, like, I'm not going to listen to this person. I understand that because we did the same thing.
There's a lot of that in Vietnam, too, with people, troops turning on their commanding officers and stuff like that. But the tech story here, Wired had a great story on it. There's a U.S. company called Primer. What they're doing is they're in real time able to feed the unencrypted communication by the Russians into this AI system, which simultaneously in real time translates it, and it basically you can be listening to hundreds of these communications, and it will surface the ones that are of particular interest. Somebody saying, "Oh, we're about to attack Kyiv or whatever," and it's the contrast between the capability of this private company that doing AI and the fact that the Russian military doesn't even have the capability or the will or the wherewithal or whatever to encrypt their military communications is just a stark contrast. It's really a stunning contrast between these communications capabilities. But this is just devastating for the Russian military because they're just listening in English to this Russian chatter in real time. And so some of this presumably is getting to the Ukrainian military leadership helping them in some way. But
I hope so.
But it's really fascinating technology.
One of the things we've been watching and interested in is cyber warfare between Russia, Ukraine, Russia, and the United States. Microsoft actually did something to disrupt attacks against Ukrainian targets, coordinated by Apt28, the Russian hacking group. Tell us about that, Daniel. What exactly happened?
So they have a process, Microsoft, now where they can just go to these courts and get immediate orders to shut down these servers and the hardware, the infrastructure that these hacking groups are using.
Are these servers controlled by Microsoft?
No, that's the thing. They're getting control, but they're going.
So they're getting permission
to
hack, basically.
Yeah, they're getting to they take them and then they redirect the traffic to a sinkhole, and so the traffic goes nowhere. And so they've been doing it for a while now, but this was just another volley this week where they found a bunch of other servers in this group going after Ukrainian telecommunications and just trying to disrupt their infrastructure. And yeah, Microsoft's been very good at it. It's very interesting how companies like Microsoft play a role in this kind of new era where they're not governments, but they have enormous power to sort of, I don't know, combat what is a new form of military warfare. And it's just, I don't know. I'm happy Microsoft's doing it. At the same time, it's like, it's scary how it could be reversed. Like, it's a lot of power that's in.
But the good news is they're getting court orders. They're doing it in a lawful fashion.
Right.
They're not just vigilante freelancing, shutting these things down. I don't understand how they shut them down, though. If they're not controlling the servers, does Microsoft have a hacking team that's getting in there and saying, okay, now we have the capability to get a court order?
That I don't know. Yeah. The actual ins and outs of how this is happening, I haven't been able to.
They're redirecting the domains, as you said, to a sinkhole that Microsoft controls. So these are, I presume, command and control, chatbot kind of things.
Yeah.
And they're somehow taking the traffic coming out of these control servers and saying, you go that way. Maybe with BGP routing. I don't know. I wonder what they're doing. I'd love to find out.
You know who might know?
Steve Gibson probably. I'll get Steve to look into it.
throw it at Steve. Steve will do it.
According to Tom Burt, who's corporate vice president at Microsoft, this disruption is part of a long-term investment started in 2016 to take legal and technical action to seize infrastructure being used by Stratium. Stratium is the name of the hacking group. That's Fancy Bear, Apt28, APT28. They all, I don't know why they have so many names. I like Fancy Bear though. That's my favorite.
Right. It's a good visual.
So we've established a legal process that enables us to obtain rapid court decisions for this work. They obviously have some sort of liaison, with the court. Fascinating, that Microsoft, but who better, I mean, if I'm the NSA, I'm saying, yeah, you do it. Go ahead. we'll support you.
But here's the thing. In a cyber war, the targets are also companies like Microsoft. So there's no...
And their customers.
There's no separation between private companies and all-out cyber warfare. They're going to go after every tech company, every, you know... And so it's kind of good to get companies like Microsoft engaged because they are also protecting themselves.
Yeah. In fact, the domains not only were used to target multiple Ukrainian institutions, including media organizations, also in attacks against U.S. and EU government institutions and think tanks involved in foreign policy. So, I guess one way you could do it is if you analyze the malware and you saw that the malware pointed people to these command and control right. servers, now you know where the command and control servers are.
Right.
You don't have to actually go and get them physically. You can reroute their traffic, I guess.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm going to ask Steve. That's a fascinating question. Yeah. Apple has finally gotten its cojones. As you may remember, the Russian government asked the App Store in Russia, the Apple App Store in Russia, to take down an app sponsored by the opposition leader, Alexei Navalny, days before Russia's legislative elections. This was after pressure from the Russian government.
Yep.
Apple acceded. They took it down. Voters went to the polls. I don't know what happened, but probably didn't go well. Apple has now restored that app. They've restored that app. Of course, there's no election going on, so I don't know. Both Apple and Google did this, remove the apps right before the election.
Yeah, but Google put it back right away. And Apple was playing like, oh, what's going to happen? Just the good thing to do, right. not good thing to do, whatever. Google did it like a couple of days after. So, yeah, I wish they had done it faster. But, you know, let's just say it's there now. Because one of the things that happened, although you might not be able to use it for voting right now, apps are apps. So when you update them, maybe they can slip in the news section and start talking about what's really going on as opposed to what's not going on. So my guess is they didn't put it back right away because they're like, election's over, no biggie. But now the app can be used for something else. Maybe they can get some live streaming with somebody, you know, telling the truth or, you know, having some Ukrainians in there or whatever to say what's really going on. Or guys who ran away like the soldiers we're talking about. So that's the good part about it, you know.
One of the reasons and one of the pressure points the Russian government had, one of the reasons Apple and Google had to give in to the Russian government is they make them have personnel in Russia right, that can be arrested. And so according to Ars Technica, who's writing this? I want to just give him credit. Timothy B. Lee. He says,
Tim Lee.
Yeah. It wouldn't be surprising if Apple had let many or all of its Russian employees go because they stopped selling iPhones in Russia in February.
Yep.
And so then the Russian government no longer has these pressure points.
Right.
And so maybe that's what happened.
Yeah, I mean, the Putin government is essentially a mafia organization. And this idea of arresting employees is a way to pressure a foreign company to do its bidding and essentially, you know, suppress speech and suppress political dissent is just another example of why everybody is very unhappy with Russia these days. So it's good that they're finally doing it. I don't know the details, but... this is one of the issues that I've been writing about for, I don't know, 10, 15 years. It also comes up with China. What do companies do? To what extent do they cooperate with authoritarian regimes when the penalty is to be expelled from the country and to lose market share to one's competitors? It's a real problem. There's a scale, right? There's a point at which... You know, if for example, the Chinese government said, okay, we want Tim Cook to personally come to stadiums in China and execute prisoners with a revolver.
We're not going
to
do that.
He would say no.
Yes.
So there's somewhere between that and like, you know, cooperating to a certain extent. There, you know, other companies like Cisco and, you know, networking companies that participate in the Great Wall of Firewall of China. There's this, you know, the authoritarian regimes are always pushing to see how far they can go. And it's a tough call. But in this case, Russia has gone so far off the rails that, you know, companies like Apple can basically finally say no to them.
There anyway.
Yep.
But it is ultimately economic. I mean, Apple could say, well, no, because we care about those poor people who are employees in Russia. We didn't want to get them arrested. But you don't have to accede to the government and say, we're going to have employees there. You're giving in to them for economic reasons.
I always oppose the rationale. So let's say, for example, let's say the Chinese government wants Apple to remove certain apps from the App Store because they're used by the opposition for one thing or another. And Apple says, okay, we'll remove those. And then Apple's defenders will say, well, they have to. They have to obey the laws in the countries they operate in. But I would say to that, they don't have to operate in those countries.
They can walk away.
They're helping the Chinese Communist Party suppress democracy and censor free speech, and they're doing it for the money. Let's be clear about what's happening.
But that's the clearest way you could put it. Boy, this show turned into a commie fest. I tell you guys. First, we're getting the oligarchs. Now we're pulling out of China. Google did it.
It's easy for us.
Yeah, easy for us to say. I have not yet pulled my podcasts from Russia or China, I just want to say. I bet you we have listeners in Russia and Ukraine. I can see no benefit. No twit listener is going to pressure Putin because we pulled a podcast from Russia.
We could turn this whole war around, actually.
You know, one of the things that we came to grips with right away when the S, you know, hit said proverbial fan is, as Mac users, we have so much software that we know and love. And I'm sure it's some on the Windows side too, a lot on the Windows side too, that are just made in Ukraine, right? The whole Riddle team. Who we've spent many a time with at Mac World. All my set app stuff, like so much of it comes directly out of there.
Love Mac Paw,
right? Yep. Those guys are so much fun. Skylum. They're great to hang out with. Yep. Skylum, which I use, right?
Yep.
So, like, there's a lot of stuff that's there that we use all the time. And so we originally had the notion of just caring about our friends because we know these guys from conferences and stuff. Yeah. And then so I'm sure a lot of that's on the other side is too. So again, it's kind of a messy situation. And I'm sure Mike can say this much more elegantly than I, but the part of the reason why we're where we are right now, even with something like that, right, as much as we have all these great tools we use from the Ukraine, back when we had our chance to dump money into education for tech and tech growth, even as we were growing the best tech companies in the world with IBM, Intel, Microsoft, Apple, all of the above, our government wouldn't put any money towards educating the tech. Those of us nerds who wanted to play, we fought over 3 computers in the lab. Some schools didn't even have 1, you know? So we kind of dug this hole for
ourselves.
There's
a reason why so much good software is coming out of Belarus and Ukraine and old Soviet republics.
Yep. Right.
Israel.
A lot of gaming in Ukraine, too.
Yep. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And we just didn't do it. Even back in the beginning of, you know, Xbox and PlayStation and, multiplayer games. I can't speak English today. You know, South Korea, because I was living there at the time. You know, the internet was just dumb fast, right? Japan, the internet is ridiculously fast. You could be underground in a tube pulling 175 up and down. No company here wants to give you 175 up and down on a mobile without thinking that you're going to just watch too much Netflix and kill the bandwidth as if it's a finite thing. You know, so like even to this day, we have caps on dumb stuff and a lot of places don't. And this leads people to just become better at what they're using, the tool, because they're using it. Our people here in quote unquote democratized, you know, richest coming to the world, we have to worry about how much I'm going to send because Cox might, you know, cap me. Like, really? Why?
Yeah.
I don't understand it.
One interesting dimension of the Russia-Ukraine conflict, as far as technology is concerned, is the use of apps for smuggling. So, information and also money. So, for example, for a while, I don't know if it's still happening, people were using Airbnb to basically book rooms in the Ukraine.
I remember that.
Which they didn't have any intention of going to Ukraine and staying in those rooms, but to as a way to transfer money from wherever to Ukraine. And there's a Ukrainian company that has a photo app that's very popular in Russia, and they're using the pop-ups, they're using the notifications of that app to inform Russians about what's really happening in Ukraine.
Wow.
And so it's bypassing everything because it's an app that people already have installed in their phones. And it's really kind of fascinating. I I've been sort of working on a piece for a while about all the different ways that the app ecosystem represents a sort of an underground railroad or sort of a secret pipeline for information, for funds transfers and so on that really can't be effectively shut down. It's an interesting development that is unique to this conflict, but won't be unique in the future, I don't think.
We have a chatter who's from Kyiv, Bodex in the chat room, and he's in Slovakia now. He's evacuated, great. But he was from Kyiv, and he's listening to the show. So welcome, Bodex. It's great to have you. I hope your family's okay.
Yeah, I just told him happy, safe, man. I'm just like, every time I get to hear from, you know, somebody from the region that somewhere safe, it makes me feel better.
Yeah.
I know that's selfish, whatever. I'm sorry. I'm going to take it though. I just want to send you aloha from Hawaii, brother.
And, I'm skeptical, so I did verify his IP address, and he's coming to us from Slovakia. So, I know people.
Disinfo is everywhere.
I know people. Yep. Let's take a little break. Anyway, God bless you, and I hope you're okay, and God bless everybody in Ukraine. Hope you're doing okay. It's tough right now. It's very hard to watch, I have to say. Let's take a little break, come back with more great panel. We will talk a little bit about, because Kevin's in the house, about Chatterbox, Kevin's amazing solution for teaching kids about voice assistance without intruding upon them.
And helping with the problem Doc Rock was talking about, which is investment in getting kids
perfect example
technology.
Yeah. Hello, Chatterbox.com, a smart speaker that teaches literacy, computer and AI literacy. Yeah. It's really cool. You got Raspberry Pis now.
We do.
Where'd you get them? Okay, good. Because I know that was one of the things holding you guys back is it runs on a Raspberry Pi and getting them has been really hard in the last few months. Oh, I'm glad you got some.
Yeah.
Hello, chatterbox.com. We'll talk more about that later in the show. Our show today brought to you by stamps.com. Print your own stamps legally from your computer, your printer. You don't even need a postage meter. You just need stamps.com. Now, I love the Postal Service. I do. In fact, we're trying to talk Michael into becoming a postal worker because they need staff right now. But with stamps.com, you can do everything you would do at the post office right from your desk. And you'll even get discounts you can't get at the Postal Service, which is awesome. Now, we've been using Stamps.com for more than a decade. They've been an advertiser since 2012. So what are you waiting for? You know, Stamps.com will actually pull the address from the website. You can put a logo on there. You can put your return address. All of this automatic, less data entry on your part. Plus, you always have exactly the right postage. Can't tell you how many times I've received packages from Etsy. Clearly, they licked the stamps. They put the wrong number on there. Postage due is not a good look for your business. Stamps.com can do it right. I got to ask you, if you've been hearing these ads and you haven't tried it, I hope you will try it. I've got one more thing that might help put you over the top. They are now a partner with the UPS as well. So, with Stamps.com, you get access to the post office and UPS shipping services. They'll even tell you which is going to be better for the thing you're shipping. You'll get discounts you don't get anywhere else, up to 40% off United States Postal Service rates, up to 76% off UPS. It is your 24/7 post office, whether you're sending invoices, maybe you've got an Etsy shop and you're making, macrame potholders, whether you're a full-blown warehouse shipping out orders, Stamps.com is there for you. You'll look more professional. You save your time. You save your money. And your recipients will love it. Just a computer and a standard printer is all you need. Print postage for anything, whether it's a letter or a package. You can do UPS anywhere you want to send for any letter, any package. It's a really great deal. So stop overpaying for shipping, whatever kind of shipping you do, stamps.com. Promo code TWIT. So what you do is you go to stamps.com. You click that microphone in the upper right-hand corner. You type in TWIT. You're going to get an amazing four-week trial, which includes a substantial amount of free postage, a digital scale. It's a great deal. Just sign up and you'll do it. I guess it's kind of up there in the corner what you're going to get. It's a $110 offer, including four weeks free of stamps.com. It's a really great deal. No long-term commitments, no contracts. We've been using it for years. I swear by it. Go to stamps.com, click the microphone at the top of the page, enter in the offer code TWIT. You won't believe what a great deal it is. Stamps.com. Thank you, stamps.com, for supporting us through this, what has been a difficult time for podcasts, I have to say. I am very excited about Unreal Engine 5. This is something Apple will not probably have because it's from Epic. And I'm curious what you think, Doc Rock, about, does it matter that Apple doesn't have access to the Unreal Engine? Look at this. Know, look how beautiful this is. It's amazing.
It's incredible. It's tough to say because I think one thing that's going to happen, and it might be a couple more generations out, but as we get more and more work on these SoCs that they're creating, eventually one of the gaming companies will take the leap and a bunch will follow.
Yeah.
Because tech-wise, yo, the thing is incredible. Like, it's absolutely incredible. But somebody has to bite the bullet and do, you know, do the thing and make the first one. Whoever does it first wins. And I think people will recognize it as a good machine. That being said, I don't know. Console gaming to me is dope. But maybe I'm just, you know, old.
No, you know, now. It's funny.
I just prefer my console because it's in a bucket. You know,
I tried to play Elden Ring on my fancy-dancy PC. And it wants a console controller, and I put it on the Xbox, and it's great. So I'm, you know, I'm perfectly happy playing. I mean, still get my ass kicked, but I'm perfectly happy playing Elden Ring.
But it looks beautiful. It looks good when it's happening. I'm going.
And I did, you know, I know it's probably better to play Flight Simulator on a PC, but I put Flight Simulator on my Series X. It's so much fun. I didn't think it'd be fun just flying around.
Now, Flight Simulator might work on the Mac, but will it use the new graphic stuff?
Yeah.
That would be pretty crazy balls.
Yeah.
Right?
There is going to be an interesting, and I'll be curious at WWC to see what happens, but people have started to look at the source code of iOS 16, codenamed Sydney, and apparently it's just loaded with references to mixed reality. And there have been a lot of rumors that Apple, of course, is going to do a mixed reality headset, something like the HoloLens Microsoft already does.
There's no question they're going to do that. The question is, when will they announce it? They always frustrate us with how long they take, but they won't do it until it's really, really ready. I think, in general, I don't know when they're going to announce this thing, but I do believe that they will announce it well before they ship it, like the iPhone.
Well,
the iPhone,
and in fact, you got to get developers developing for it. So the time to announce it, frankly, is this June.
There are already references to a simulator. So I think there's a 2-digit percentage chance that they're actually going to announce this thing, open it up to developers. I think it's a real possibility and people can start building it on the simulator. So,
somewhere between 10% and 99% chance.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, probably ten. Let's go with the 10.
2 digits is kind of a wide.
I've been burned so many times, Leo.
Mark Gurman points out that because it's in iOS 16, lots of references that it will probably launch during the life cycle of iOS 16. Doesn't mean it'll come out in the fall when iOS 16 does, but it will sometime between fall 2022 and fall 2023. That seems reasonable.
Right.
Absolutely. And weren't the rumors that this first version, so there's like supposed to be 3 stages, I believe, where this first version is going to be like a $3,000 headset, kind of
developer model,
more kind living of room based.
Yeah,
and it'll probably come out for developers first, and then I don't know if it'll come out, you know, regular for consumers. The next stage is the one that people really want, but that's not until 2024 or 2025, which is this idea of like Apple glasses. The idea you just put on glasses and you uses your iPhone and your Apple Watch as, you know, the actual computer connection to it, and you just walk around the world, right? And you see augmented reality. It gives you information, notifications, and all this kind of stuff. I think that's really the dream here. I'm really curious about what Apple's going to bring to the table in terms of augmented reality and virtual reality in the living room that hasn't already been done that's so unique. Because I'm still, I feel what their second generation, this idea of like glasses, is what people really want, but we still seem pretty far off from it. Although North, you know, North Focals was doing some cool stuff in this area before.
I thought
Google
those were great.
Yeah.
But then they're gone. Yeah. But Google owns them now.
But I can answer that question. So first of all, you talk about the regular glasses that are actual augmented reality where you're seeing through glass, you see the real world through glass rather than the first version, which will essentially be VR that they use for AR, where you're looking at a video of the real world. That's the first version. There's no way the glass version are going to be out in 2024. That is the plan. You're correct that that's what the intention is. That's what the rumors are. But I don't believe there's any way in hell they're going to be out with that version
technology
in 2 years. There's no way. But here's their what I believe their killer app is. They call it Bionic Virtual Meeting Room. Basically, it's a way to have social interaction, and it's a way to do business meetings through AR. So basically, holographic Memoji, where you can do the eye contact, you hear the rich audio. So if Leo is a hologram sitting there, I would turn and hear him, his voice coming from this direction. I could make eye contact with his hologram. I think that's really the killer app that they've been working on. They did an acquisition. I don't recall the name of the company. And, you know, 2-3 years ago, and they have dozens of patents around this Bionic Virtual Meeting Room idea. So that's their idea for a killer app for their AR in the short term. And I think it's actually, I think they're onto something.
This might solve the hybrid workforce
and Zoom fatigue. Yeah. That whole thing, the Brady Bunch wall of people.
But come on, wearing that headset for hours at a time.
No, but this is the difference between the Zuckerverse, as I call it, and Apple's version. The Zuckerverse idea is, we're going to just get up in the morning and put on headset. And live in the metaverse all day. There's no way that's going to happen. Apple says, we're going to be living in the real world, but every once in a while we'll put on the goggles for a 45-minute meeting.
Right.
That is the right version of what is going to happen.
It'll certainly be more like being in person.
Yes, exactly. You'll see your actual environment, and then holographic humans will come. You know, Apple's not the only one doing this. There are dozens of companies working on this idea, but they've got some really good technology, and they're the ones who will mainstream it, I believe.
What's your prognosis for HoloLens, Daniel? It's unclear what Microsoft's long-term goals are with that.
Yeah, well, I was going to also mention Microsoft Mesh is the same concept of having a virtual meeting space that they worked with Altspace, and they've kind of combined these technologies. Well, this idea, you know, it's interesting if Apple has, like, it makes sense, right? If they have a video capability to do a video stream of your real environment and then do what Microsoft was calling holoportation a couple of years ago, where you bring people into your environment. To answer your question about HoloLens, the Insider did a real bang-up job of reporting on the inside happenings of the HoloLens team and mixed realities team there. And, you know, it seems chaotic, and I'm really kind of worried about what's going on there. It sounds like they were working HoloLens 3, which was going to be, again, more of an enterprise device, was going to have newer technology. But then they got this massive government contract, and they started devoting a lot of their resources towards that.
The military, right? The Army was going to buy 100, or still is going to buy 100,000 HoloLenses, although Microsoft's been downplaying.
And the Army is not happy.
Well, the Microsoft results. Warned. You know, the soldiers aren't going to like this at first. You just got to bear with us.
But the technology, it's not up to what they were saying that they promised they could deliver.
And what about the rumors that they are planning to partner with Samsung on...
Right. And so that was a separate rumor that was then later kind of confirmed by insiders saying that, they're partnering with Samsung to develop some sort of mixed reality or augmented reality glasses or headset, which I think makes a lot of sense for Samsung, because Samsung wants more than anything to compete with Apple, and Samsung can't do it all. So they rely a lot of times on Microsoft. You see Samsung going also big on PC and computers these days. And with those PC computers, they're using them as extensions for their Galaxy phones to mimic the ecosystem, the tight ecosystem that Apple has. So
in fact, this is the only phone that really works well with your phone, now my phone on Windows 11, is the Samsung phone, but it works flawlessly. It works beautifully with it.
Yeah, well, I mean, the only difference with the your phone, or what's now called Link to Windows, is the...
I thought they were going to call it my phone.
...ability to stream apps.
They're not going to call it my phone.
No.
It's going to be called somebody's phone.
Link to Windows. Okay.
Yeah.
But the idea is that you pair it to your phone. You have an app on your phone, and you can see the phone. You can see an image of your phone's screen on your Windows screen. You can share apps.
Yeah.
It's kind of a, like, yeah, it's a cool technology. Like, you get notifications on your computer.
Yeah, so it just does like app streaming. Yeah. And then the Samsung version allows you to launch individual Android apps, like their little windowed apps. Right. That's the main difference. And you have copy-paste. But for anyone who has an Android phone, Android 7.0 or higher, you can do things like do your phone calls, do your photos, do SMS. So you're already getting that integration.
That's basically,
but yeah, Samsung gets a little extra.
That's parity to what Apple's got with its iPhones, basically.
Yes, right, right. So, but with Samsung, so the question, of course, is, all right, so Samsung,
but Samsung can make the hardware. They've got the screens. They seem like they'd be a great hardware partner, and Microsoft the software partner, right?
Right, because Samsung has mass global production. They actually know how to make this stuff. What do they also make, right? They make the LCD screens used in a lot of VR-type headsets. They own their own audio company, AKG. They make their own processors, right? So they do a full stack, basically. But Microsoft also has all the technical know-how they learned from HoloLens and holographic computing, as well as the software. But the question is it's going to run on Android? What's happening to all the stuff that Microsoft has been building out for the last 7-8 years with holographic mixed reality on the Windows platform, which doesn't sound like it has much of a path forward? We don't know what that is. HoloLens 3 reportedly got canceled. The government contract is now problematic. Apparently, it's having issues. And now you have the Samsung strategy, which is like, seems like it'll really benefit Samsung, but I don't see how it benefits Microsoft long term if they want to do this idea of like mixed reality for Windows. So, and then on top of that, you have a lot of employees who are absolutely unhappy about this, which is why they had 20 people for that article for Insider that were not on the record, but off the record,
leaking,
who are either current or former employees. Like that's a lot of people.
Is that the military thing they're unhappy with, the defense contract? That's what they don't want?
No, I think a lot of the people were unhappy because they hired a guy from from Apple, and his goal and he just wanted to build a consumer version of HoloLens, right? There was this question, when are we going to get that? Apparently, he was brought over to do that, and that's not really happening at this point. So the teams aren't happy because there's no sense of direction. It's chaotic.
Right.
And these projects that they've been breaking off on are kind of failing and not doing well. So I don't know. It really sounds... Well, it sounds like typical Microsoft, to be honest.
It's pretty rocky, but if you look at the mesh presentations... really required a HoloLens. They show somebody using an Oculus, I guess, something like an Oculus, or maybe an HTC Vive. But honestly, without the hardware HoloLens part, I don't really. Does any of this make sense?
Meanwhile,
you can do the VR part. Yeah, you could do like VR with it. So you can use like regular VR headsets and it'll still be fine. But HoloLens would give you the ability
pretty
to see
critical.
Your environment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is the
all VR. It is fantastic tech. And you know where the majority of this VR stuff is going to end up? On the yellow and black site that shall remain nameless that way too many dudes spend too much time on.
I'm trying to think what it is. Yellow and black.
Don't think, Neil. Just let it go. the audience knows what it is. Trust you're a nice human.
I feel like I'm left in the cold, out in the cold. I don't even know what you're talking about.
Okay. Daniel got it, and so that was good enough.
Okay. Okay. I get it. Something adult. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Requires less clothes.
Less clothes.
Where all the internet goes.
That's where it always goes. Have you been to Second Life lately? I can't believe what's happened to Second Life.
Quick thing about Magic Leap, though. They came out with the second version, and they have two features that I think are really killer. So when we talk about consumer versus enterprise, we all want a consumer thing. We think about a consumer thing, but actually enterprise is where AR is really going to blast off, this high-end AR that, you know, that HoloLens is going to do for quite a while. And then the consumer stuff will blow up many years in the future. So you have Apple, who's going to have this big consumer thing, but also enterprise, but it'll seem consumer, but it'll be valuable for enterprise. Magic Leap 2 is going to have a killer enterprise product for two reasons. One is they're going full open source. So they're using Android open source
This is so funny because I've written Magic Leaf off completely. So
no, yeah, well,
they're still
right,
around.
They've almost died a couple of times.
Yeah.
But their new version is really great. And so lots of companies, universities, enterprises will be able to very quickly create their own special purpose applications, which is why, in fact, it's going to blow up on enterprise first, because you only need one or two applications for specific enterprise usages, whether it's in the, you know, a factory or for drivers or whatever. And the other one that I think is really brilliant is they have this kind of dark mode for their glasses, where if so let's say you're outside and you have this holographic projection that you need to do useful work with, you can't see it because it's like too bright. So they have this thing that will darken the screen and make it almost like VR. So they basically darken the actual environment while giving you this bright holographic data or image or whatever that you can interact with. And that is a really great feature for enterprise applications, because now you can be in a bright factory, you can be in a boardroom, you can be outside, you can be in lots of these environments, and you're not doing VR, you're doing AR, and it's highly visible. So I actually don't think we should be writing off Magic Leap. In fact, I think they're doing far, far better and have a bigger chance than Microsoft does in this space.
Wow.
My own personal opinion, but I think
this is a video of the Magic Leap 2, which is not yet
right.
out.
Comes out later this year,
but doesn't look, frankly, as spooky and insectoid as Magic Leap 1
did. It's much better.
Magic Leap 1 had the same problem HoloLens had, which was it's just this narrow slot of VR.
Yes. So they broadened the
AR. So that's bigger now.
Field of vision.
Okay.
Yeah.
The jury's really out on this whole mixed reality thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Reality is hard enough.
I know. I love the premise, and I feel like I can see the vision.
Yes.
But it's maybe it's just very hard to do.
Well, it's hard to do it. It's expensive, and the batteries are an issue. And where you know, how do you put processing power into a headset? Do you have
there
a thing
a
that puts on your belt and so on? I think that the killer combination is when you have, you know, I think Apple is in a good position, so they can connect it to an iPhone, which can be the supercomputer that powers it,
yeah.
right? And then what they can do is they can use, I believe that Apple's going to heavily use QR codes. So QR codes can give you the data that you want to present in AR and also the location.
We all walk around with a little QR code on our forehead?
No, you put a QR code on a bottle or on a table or something like that.
You're looking at
and the thing hovers over the QR code,
right.
but it also tells you what to go, or a sign on a restaurant window, or, you know, you can put QR codes anywhere, and that can be the location for, you know, I'm talking, you know, 1.0 usage for the mass public. In the future, they will
just recognize
the problem
objects.
Is anchoring it to physical reality. How do you do that?
Yeah.
And that's a lot of what the, you know, what HoloLens is so good at. You can have a virtual object that not only stands on the table, but actually gets behind the table. How do you do that? It's really, really hard.
Right.
So I think QR codes can solve that in the short term and in a more cost-effective way. And, of course, Apple has all kinds of really unique Apple-specific QR code-type technology that they've worked on. So I really think this is going to seem like this whole category is kind of going nowhere until Apple hits us with their version. And then suddenly it's game on, because they're going to mainstream it.
It's early days.
Yes.
And I mean, I think that's what Microsoft's struggling with HoloLens is it's not quite delivering yet.
Right.
And they've just got, and
no one knows what to do with it.
Yeah.
I mean, outside of like an enterprise, like you can do, you know, Mike's right. You can do specific applications. They're using it in medical schools. Right. But when it comes to the consumer space, it's like, what is that killer app? You know, mm-hmm. AR, VR, VR at least at home, it's like, it's gaming, right? That's gaming and social has been kind of the two main driving factors for VR. But how do you now, there's still something so isolating about it. If you have a family and you're like, all right, I'm putting on my VR helmet,
right.
You're just basically cutting yourself off from the rest of society, the rest of people around you. But when you go to AR and this idea of you're just wearing glasses and it's just giving you, you know, augmented reality is giving you information about the world around you. That kind of changes things.
So you know, Daniel, one thing that I've been waiting for. Sorry, brother. One thing that I've been waiting for. Okay,
no.
So you're wearing this shirt right now, and it's a cool shirt, right? Like, say I would love to walk into, you know, the men's haberdashery, and I try on that shirt. But that shirt has the near field communication to the mirror, because it comes in six colors, right? You know what we do now? We try on all six. I would love to just put on one, go stand in front of the mirror, and then swipe the mirror. Okay, let me see it in blue. All right, that works. Let me see it in red. Yep, okay, I'll take all three of those. You know, and that kind of stuff is how we get it into the normal people space where it works.
Yeah.
Even for a car, like I've been dying to get like micro, you know, LED paint job, because I had a great car today, but you know,
tomorrow my favorite team, purple car.
Right, my favorite team is playing. I want to rock Manchester United colors. I just want to hit a button. It's Manchester out.
Is that black and yellow? Like, is that the black and yellow you were talking about?
No, that's red and that's red and gold. Okay. But you know, it's that old what is that game called? The original PlayStation GT 5 Gran Turismo. There you go.
Gran Turismo. Okay.
Gran Turismo. Like, it'd be super cool for stuff like that. And I think when we can figure that stuff out, where it's actually semi-functional and not just the gaming side, that's what's coming. And yes, I do believe e-ink paint is coming. I actually know some material scientists here at a university that are working on stuff like that. So
nice.
That's the stuff that's going to be quite amazing.
They self-healing paint. Yes, yeah, Mercedes.
They're doing self-healing paint and then e-ink for colors.
You're going to need self-healing paint if you've got e-ink paint. You're going to need something pretty powerful to heal that one up. Actually, you know where they may find use for this? You just made me think of this. In retail, there is a massive problem right now in retail. I think partly due to the pandemic. This is from the CNBC. A National Retail Federation survey found that more merchandise was returned to retailers in 2021 than the entire U.S. military budget. $761 billion of merchandise returned. Amazon, we don't know how much, but Amazon's got a big portion of that. Returns are way up year over year, and I think that's because people don't go to the store and try on five colors of Daniel's shirt. They order all five, they try them on, keep one, send four back.
And that's why Amazon Prime Wardrobe is, right?
Yeah.
Amazon has the thing basically, where you purposely order that. And it's set up to do exactly that. You're supposed to return
it's
what you don't want.
Huge cost.
I just realized
society,
I'm part
though.
Of the problem.
Yeah, you do that.
I just realized I'm part of the problem.
You
no,
do
because
that.
I'm Stitch Fix.
There you
and
go.
I love Stitch Fix because I hate going to the mall. But
do you get different T-shirts from Stitch Fix? Yeah. I didn't realize that.
They're sending you the stuff. You pick what you want. They send it back.
Right.
But I swear, just literally 2-3 days ago, I saw something on YouTube. I think it was Business Insider again. You know how the algorithm works. Where they're showing you this mountain in Africa. Of
huge
all
problem.
They call it fast retail clothes. You know, the H&Ms and stores like that, I don't go to the mall, so I can't remember them.
Kohl's,
Kohl's, that kind of stuff. Big Lots. It all ends up at this place. These women, they sell it in the bazaar there in the secondary market. And Alex probably knows this down to the detail.
They grind it up into argan oil, I think.
It ends up into these giant mountains of clothes on the beach, and they were so sad and disgusting.
16.6% of all merchandise sold during the holiday season. 16.6 was returned. The average return rate for online, 21%. U.S. returns generate 16 million metric tons of carbon emissions because they've got to be shipped back.
Right.
And 5.8 billion pounds of landfill every year. Maybe we do need VR just so that we can try shirts on. Amazon has said to old CNBC, we don't send stuff to landfills. We do, get this, energy recovery. You know what energy recovery is?
Landfills?
Burn it.
Oh, God. Wow.
Burn it. We burn it. Oh, that's better. Anyway.
For the environment.
Yeah. All right.
Amazon also does a thing. It's actually very convenient, but contributes to this, where you get something sent to you, decide you don't like it, and you can bring it back to a local store and just return it there. You don't need to send it back to them.
Still a return.
And a lot of times that store then gives you a credit or a coupon and then gets you to shop in that store, which I've actually used numerous times. It's been pretty brilliant.
I think maybe there's a time coming in this world where we stop trading convenience for climate. I don't know if you saw the latest UN report. We are in bad shape.
Yep.
We've only got about a 10-year window left to change things. There was a great editorial in the LA Times, which kind of I took to heart. The only thing we should be talking about right now is the climate crisis, because the time has come. We are in deep, deep water. So anyway, cheer up.
Well,
it's almost over.
Right. It'll all be over soon.
It's all going to be over soon. But I think the kinds of things that we're doing, like trading convenience.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's really convenient.
Right.
But it's destroying the environment is not a good thing.
One thing I loved about that article is that they really pile on to the language we use. So we say climate change, which sounds innocuous and natural, and we really should call it something like
crisis.
The human extinction
yes.
crisis.
It's or, an you extinction know,
we
event.
Should, we need a better language. We shouldn't yeah. call it global warming or anything that sounds, you know, pleasant. We should call it the you know, the generational, you know, once in a, you know, human lifetime crisis that's about to kill us all. We need to boost the language so that when we talk about it, we understand that this is like really, really urgent.
Yeah. Sigh. Let's take a little break because I can't do anything about climate change right now. But if
I'm going to cancel my Stitch Fix,
I'll get right on that. Yeah. I don't know. You know, we actually more and more, we're getting more and more sponsors that are all about,
yeah.
you know, reducing plastic use and stuff. I stopped shaving with one of those 5-blade plastic razors and I use the old fashioned single blade that is metal and I recycle it and I don't buy another handle every week and all that stuff. And just trying to do more, you know, trying to here in California, we're now starting to compost. I noticed a huge reduction in the amount of recycling we
yep.
do because
yep.
it's a lot of it's compost now.
Yeah.
But we just got to do more. And the truth is, as much as we do as individuals, and I have an electric car and all of our cars are electric and we have solar panels generating all the electricity they use and our house uses. But it, no individual can change the world. We got to all do it. And governments have to get it.
Well, then also, it's still too also an industry too, right?
Because, industry, absolutely.
It's really like the consumers always get blamed for it. And then the industry comes up with ways to set the argument, right? We're going to give you, here's the old school way for people who love it. Never mind the new people who are trying to do wah, wah, wah. And for the wah, wah, wah people, here's another thing that costs even more than a traditional one because you want to be a good human being. That thing right there, it drives me batty. There's no way that certain foods without all the unnecessary things that are harmful for you should cost more. And no way they should get away with lying on packages about stuff that's healthy for you that's actually not. Like, those two things got to go away right away.
The real problem is that we've pulled trillions of dollars of oil out of the ground.
Right.
We have this massive infrastructure investment, trillions and trillions of dollars, and those companies are not willing to abandon their investment. They're not willing to abandon that $1 trillion worth of oil they've already pulled out of the ground. But if we burn it all, it's too late.
Yeah.
There will be yep. nothing yep. left. Billions will die. And but you know what? I don't want to – I already pulled it out of the ground. We got to use it.
And plastic is a petroleum product, and it's cheap.
It's such a nightmare.
Yeah. So
such a nightmare. And we have a great sponsor, Blue Land, which I'll give a free plug to, where it's all about not reusing,
right.
you know, single-use plastic, not wasting all those plastics.
If I could advise people about how to think about this in the most simple way, don't lean too hard on recycling. Recycling's good. You should do it. But that's not a solution. Don't just buy plastic willy-nilly and say, well, I can
recycle
it.
They're not recycling plastic.
No. The only good plastic is one that you never buy or use. And the only environmentally friendly smartphone, for example, back to tech, is the one that's never manufactured. Mm-hmm. Because once you manufacture a smartphone, you have toxic chemicals, you have all this stuff, you have all these problems. So we should be embracing iFixit. We should be embracing repairability and reusability. And everybody should embrace the idea of using laptops and phones and tablets and everything, milking them and getting every bit of life out of them one way or the other as we can to reduce the manufacture of new devices, because that's really what's going to help the tech industry do a better job with the environment.
Right on. Yeah. Take a little break to sell something and then that will not use any environmental resources. And then we'll be back with some final thoughts from our fabulous panel. Doc Rock is in the house. Great to have you, Sean.
Mahalo.
Mahalo. Mahalo. Aloha.
Mahalo.
Mahalo. Aloha. Mele Kaliki Maka. Also, Daniel Rubino, executive editor of Windows Central, and the fabulous Mike Elgin from Elgin.com. Our show today brought to you by IT Pro TV. You know, if you're in IT already, you know what a great job it is, how much we're needed, IT folks. And you also know that it's a constant education. You cannot sit still. You got to get recertified. You got to get new skills. You got to get, if you want a better job, get new skills. IT Pro TV is the place to learn. And if you have a business with an IT team, IT Pro TV is still the place to go. Your IT team needs those skills. They need those knowledge, those upgrades. You know, providing IT Pro TV for your IT team is just a no-brainer for businesses. You get huge return on investment. But you want to make sure it's something they enjoy doing, because if they enjoy doing it, they'll do it. They'll get more value out of it. I should tell you, IT Pro TV, more than 80% of users who start a video actually finish it because it's engaging, it's informative, they get what they want out of it, it's not painful. It's all divided up into small chunks, 20 to 30 minutes, so you can watch it at a lunch break or at a quick break. It's fascinating, it's fun, and it's fresh. That's really important. Tech industry is constantly changing, and you need to be trained in the latest software releases, the latest system upgrades, latest cyber threats. IT Pro TV has 7 studios running Monday through Friday all day, so they have brand new content all the time. Content goes from the studios to their library in 24 hours. Right now, they're up to 5,800 hours worth of fascinating, informative, useful content, ranging from technical skills to compliance to even soft skills to business skills. Microsoft, Cisco, Linux, Apple, security, cloud, every vendor, every skill, all in one place. And the dashboard for business is great. You can track your team's results, easy to manage your teams, make assignments to even to individuals or subsets of teams. You can have full courses or just assign individual episodes. Because all the episodes have full transcripts, you can even say, I want you to watch minute 15 and minute 17. You need to learn this. And the reporting is great. You'll get all sorts of insight into your team's viewing patterns, what progress they're making. You'll know that you're getting the return on investment with IT Pro TV. They'll love it, you'll love it, and you'll have a smarter team, and you know, everybody wins. Give your IT team the development platform they need to level up their skills while enjoying the journey for teams from 2 to 1,000. And by the way, volume discounts start as low as 5 seats. Plus, if you mention TWIT30 to your account executive at IT Pro TV, you'll get 30% off or more on a business plan. So what are you waiting for? itpro.tv/twit. itpro.tv/twit. And don't forget that offer code. Say TWIT30. And that way we get credit and you get a nice 30% discount. itpro.tv/twit. Had a great week this week on TWIT. We've made a nice little video for you. Enjoy this at your leisure.
Okay, so on this episode, we are proving that Wynn and Flo are not the same person, just disguised as different people, because they're never on the same time.
There were some concerns.
But look at our backgrounds when you reverse them. They're kind of the same.
Previously on TWIT. All about Android.
Flo actually goes hands-on with 4 devices, the OnePlus 10 Pro, the Motorola Edge Plus, the Xiaomi 12 Pro, and the Samsung Galaxy A53.
This Week in Google.
Street photography. It's a new book of street photography, but it's not of people. It's of the screens of their smartphones. These are great photos.
Great
and it's
photos.
Fascinating.
Yes.
And I think it's a total invasion of privacy. But you can get the book. It's #NYC from Jeff Mermelstein.
Tech News Weekly.
It's a subreddit called Place. And it's just so cool. The idea is that any user, any Reddit user, can post one single pixel, or they call it a tile. After that pixel is placed, I must then wait 5 minutes before I can place another. So what this does is it requires collaboration with others in order to actually create something meaningful.
TWIT. Tech, or just like you like it.
To have a massive battle over the Canadian flag or whatever.
Or to just waste a lot of time.
/r/place is fascinating.
Yeah,
it's over.
So cool.
It's over, but boy, some of the battles, and the I don't know what the Germans were. They had the flag just went all the way across. I mean, they were very organized.
Somebody would build a building, then it would catch on fire, then a fire truck.
That
would
was
come
a hysterical and, one.
Wasn't
yes.
that amazing?
That
how
was an amazing one.
How did they organize that?
Gamers, I guess.
I was going to say the Among Us guy. they kept drawing human parts on the Among Us person, and it would get erased, and they kept coming back, and it was just like, this is a good use of people's time. I can say.
It's been voided out, so you're not going to be able to add to it anymore. But this is the final Our Place. I've seen people get giant prints of it. There's Zelensky. There's a lot of Ukrainian stuff in here. Do they have we can watch the timeline. It's 82 minutes long. I don't know if I want to go through the whole thing. You can also zoom in. But pretty impressive. Yeah. Pretty impressive what they did. I love Reddit. I'm sorry. I live on Reddit now. I don't contribute. I just read.
Why is there a Chelsea in there?
Well, we should get Man United. Wait a minute. Yeah, you Man United fans, you got to get involved.
We're too busy crying from a crappy season.
All right. So this is the void when it started. Here, we can scroll through it, and you can see it building. It's pretty amazing. I don't know. I don't know if it's going to stay up forever. I think they pretty much shut this down after a while. /r/place on reddit.com. You can see stuff happening. There's the German flag. It's kind of wild. Kind of wild.
Incredible.
Yep.
The hive mind.
It is the hive. Let's see. We're not going to get to a tenth of the stories I had planned for you, I'm sorry to say. Drones are dropping ice cream in Texas. Alphabet's Wing drones, they're being used to deliver stuff primarily from Walgreens, but also Bluebell Creameries. The video of it looks like it's on a fishing line. It drops down. The kid runs out, picks it up. What could possibly go wrong?
It seems so weird. Inefficient, doesn't it?
It's like every tech demo ever. It's like, what? What? Windows 3.1? Now, we talked about how VR, it's in its infancy. Windows 3.1, which is the first decent Windows, 30 years ago. That's all.
Wow.
That's all. You both are big Windows guys. Mike, you were probably
That was the version that really sent Windows Magazine at the time into the stratosphere. I remember the first issue that we published, we were going on and on about how huge Windows was. It had 4 million users. And
3 million copies in the first 3 months. But Windows 1 was terrible. Windows 2 was terrible. Oh. Even Windows 3 was pretty awful.
Right.
But I remember vividly, what was this, 30 years ago, so 92, right. Looking at 3.1 going, uh-oh.
Yeah.
This is actually going to happen. This is good.
Oh, man.
This is even better than OS 2.
Leo, was Windows for Work Groups, right?
Yeah. That was
3.1.
3.1.
3.1. That's where I made my money. Yep. Like back then, I used to just do so much networking and getting offices set up. And Windows for Work Groups was fantastic. Nice.
Happy birthday. Microsoft also celebrating. It was formed April 4th, 1975, I think. So it's 47. It's just a middle-aged company.
Yes.
Let's see. What else? Did anybody watch Friday Night Baseball on Apple TV?
Oh, yes. But that's not the thing. The thing is the Dick Tracy pitch thing.
The pitch thing. They weren't using it on the Nats game that I was watching. That's weird. It's on your. It's so the problem has been for years signal stealing.
Yeah.
Right? You'll have somebody out in the outfield with a camera beaming it back to the dugout so that the batter can know that it's going to be a fastball high and tight and he can hit it. So this is a technology to avoid pitch stealing. You've got a little calculator that's big on the catcher's wrist and a little earpiece to the pitcher. And the catcher goes, I noticed a lot of teams are not yet using it.
How do you do that with a glove? Do you have the whole glove? Is there a...
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know.
That's what had me kind of bummed. But so it's on the gloved hand. Right. So your other hand.
Yeah. Okay. So it's on your free hand.
But there's a little bone conductor that goes into the back of the pitcher's new era and it goes slider. Like what?
Slider.
Was that a slider or a
cutter? Slider. Right?
Because the only way. Okay. Here's why this is dumb. Here's how we defeat this. All right, so you got out there, you're set up, right? Yankees dude is on the mound. We're at Fenway, and he's punching away, trying to ask for a slider, and all we do in Fenway is just make noise. He can't hear nothing.
Niner.
So he's like, was that a slider or a cutter?
Niner.
Cutter. And you bring that cutter in, and it just gets sent over the freaking Green Monster and Andy Inoko and Doc Rock's tear. Yay! Like, I don't know. It's funny, but I get where they're going, but yo, it's so far.
Here's the device.
And it's huge.
It's on the. It's huge. On. It's a big. You'd think they could make this a little better. This seems pretty. It's like a maybe like they had a lot of leftover blackberries. Yeah, and the pitchers say it sounds. Mets reliever Adam Ottavino said, "You don't even notice it. It just sort of whispers to you. It's like
he plays for the Mets. He can ask him." I'm sorry, Mets fans. I'm sorry. I'm from New York, but I'm not a Mets fan. I'm not a Yankees fan either. I'm a Red Sox fan. So
yeah, Red Sox. Yeah. Anyway, okay.
And the race is on to crack it.
Oh, I bet.
Right?
You know, I hope it's encrypted.
Dude, any one of those pitchers can hand this to their 15-year-old and like, Dad, here's how you do it. Like,
yeah, yeah, probably.
There. Also,
probably.
They're going to put cameras on the wrist so you can see what buttons are pushing.
Yeah. You know, that's all you do. You zoom on the wrist instead of the fingers.
Yeah, it's silly. It was a good try at baseball.
Yeah.
But you know what? They are working really hard to try to get... This is funny because I love baseball. I think, Leo, you too. Right?
I do, yeah.
One of the things, they lost their star power a while ago, and they haven't really been able to put it back. The last of the stars are A-Rod and Poppy. Who cares what you think about them? They're just not really in the game. Like, if you went to...
You say that because you're a Red Sox fan. I know that.
No. I said A-Rod, so I'm giving him his props. Okay. Right now, the biggest star is probably Judd. But, like, you know,
they don't have the star power.
The Mike Trouts, like, no, it's not the same anymore, right? So if you ask somebody who's the most wicked player, I see Red Sox fan, who's the most wicked player in baseball right now, they can't even tell you.
Yeah.
Like, that's
what's
happening
to baseball. I feel like it's too slow for the modern times. It's probably a dying sport, but.
I love baseball.
I do, too. And I have to say, Apple TV did not do baseball justice on Friday with their two games. They're trying new graphics, which I liked. It's awesome in 4K, but turn the sound off because I don't know who these guys are doing the play-by-play. But
go get some better.
Get some
that's
people.
My first thought to get some better, get some or people. Let us do it.
Yeah,
if you get
there, you
the
go.
First football, basketball, baseball executive, listen to us. Back in the day. And when Fox had soccer, Fox Soccer Nation, they used to do a thing on Mondays where they would play a game and just let two fans from opposing teams go at it. So it'd be a Manchester game versus Arsenal. And you had a group of fans that got randomly picked and a group of fans from the Arsenal got randomly picked. And we did the play-by-play. That it was hilarious. It was fun. Everybody would tune in. The chat back then was on some special chat app, which now we have all of this stuff, right? So, like, do a sports broadcast on like Apple TV where you let fans come in and maybe there's a panel of 10 from each side you randomly picked and it would be just glorious.
That would be interesting.
I watched that.
Yeah.
Or maybe they need the podcast feature where you can watch baseball at 1.5 speed.
You know, that might solve it.
That
would solve it.
To the Benny Hill theme.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. You know what I did recently try, Mike? When I was at my tech conference, normally on every other weekend, I babysit my niece. And, you know, she was her night to come over, but I was out of town. So she came over anyway. And then we watched, Ryan Rendell's movie. We watched it over the Apple
Adam
SharePlay stuff.
The Adam Project.
And it was... It was great.
How
it was
fun
super
is that?
I'm in my hotel. I'm in my hotel.
That's
in
really
San Diego.
Cute. Yeah.
They're here in Hawaii and we watched it together.
That's
and
really
it was
cute.
Fantastic.
That's nice.
So,
I like that.
It was good.
Here's a good use of technology by an old form of technology. Amtrak set up a Twitch stream. This is the train station in Bay St. Louis, Mississippi. Amtrak wants to open a passenger service, two trains a day, between Mobile, Alabama and New Orleans. But the freight train lines that own the track say no because we're using it for freight trains. So Amtrak set up a Twitch stream of this track so you could watch it and see how dead it was. It really isn't fair. The freight train companies say, well, of course, we do 8 trains a day on that track. You're not going to see it all the time. It's going to be kind of slow. 8 to 10 through trains, 1 to 3 coal and grain trains, and numerous local trains. CSX says Amtrak wants to run 2 round trips a day. That's 4 trains. But the problem is these freight trains are so long, you have to have big sidings for them to, because it's a single track, as you can see. There's only one train at a time and one right. in both directions. So, but I thought it was interesting that, let's see if the Twitch stream is up right now. Amtrak Connect Us is offline. But you can watch a popular... You can watch a popular clip. Let's do that right now.
this is one of the better clips.
This is good. I'm glad they saved this one.
Oh, look, clouds moved. Look, there's a squirrel.
All right. I'm going to leave this up for all of you who want to stay tuned and watch the rest of the evening. Amtrak station, Mississippi, not very busy. Kind of slow right now. a lot happening. Oh, that was it. That was the whole clip. It's over. Sorry.
Just loop it
because, you know, it ain't going to change. Hey, I'm glad Kevin came, your son. I really want to give a big plug. HelloChatterbox.com. Yeah. This is a great choice for any school that wants to get kids up to date on AI, on smart speakers, without invading their privacy. They build it themselves, and now that you guys have Raspberry Pis in stock, how much is a Chatterbox?
Without the Raspberry Pi, it's $149.
$149. Provide your own Raspberry Pi, and it has a very simple Chatterbox language, which is a customized version of Google Blocky. So the kids are coding the skills themselves. It does not listen to you until you hit the button, so no intrusion. But a really great idea for STEM literacy in the schools.
And one issue with education is that the teachers feel like, oh, you know, I'm not a technologist. How do I teach technology to the kids?
Right.
And Chatterbox solves that problem because basically it's very simple for teachers to teach it. They don't have to be technological. They don't have to be developers or programmers or engineers or anything. They can just be regular teachers. And the curriculum takes them through the process of doing everything on Chatterbox. And so the kids learn without the teachers having to be a, you know, PhD in computer science or whatever. So.
And, you know, I remember this learning programming. You know, what we did is, you know, 10, hi, Leo, go to 10.
Yeah.
But having the computer actually do something, anything, because you wrote a program for it to do it is amazing.
Right.
And you can write a program for it to do square roots and not know a thing about square roots. And it does it.
Yep.
On demand. And that feels pretty damn good for a fifth grader or sixth grader. That's exciting.
And with access to APIs into Wolfram Alpha and all these other weather services
more.
And everything, you can just build the most powerful, like genuinely powerful things with it very simply. And this blows away teachers and students. I went with Kevin to Indianapolis to this big technology education event. And everyone's blown away by the power of it and the flexibility of it. And it's just an amazing product that will, you know, help kids. You know, this is the kind of thing that we would have if we had the kind of Sputnik energy that, remember when Sputnik happened and the U.S. decided to really do a big push into science and engineering and mathematics and technology. And much of the technology that we have today is the result of that. This is the kind of thing they would embrace now if they had a clue about getting kids really prepared for the future.
Do any individual parents buy them for their kids or... Some?
Yeah, it's available, but we really focus more like an impact-driven company.
It's mostly you want to get in classes and stuff. Yeah.
You know, get in school.
But I could spoil you.
Looking for these solutions, and especially with the pandemic.
Yeah.
I wouldn't buy one just for my niece and I.
I know. Wouldn't it be cool?
Yeah.
I just feel like you'd have so much fun doing it together and all that. Yeah. HelloChatterbox.com. I always like to give Kevin a big plug. And, of course, as long as we're plugging, GastroNomad.net.
Yes. Yep.
What's the next one? Prosecco?
Well, Prosecco, Barcelona, and Morocco are all sold out. So this year, but
it sounds really good, but you only take a few couples. It's not like there's a big group of people.
We do small intimate groups for Prosecco. We're doing, I think, 8 to 10 people. But I would really encourage people to embrace our Provence experience. This is in the summer during the peak of lavender season.
Nice.
And Amira doesn't let me give away anything. I can't tell you anything about it.
Because you know, it's a surprise. Yeah. It's that's the whole point of it.
But Mexico City and Oaxaca are also have availability, and those are wonderful experiences. Nice. Well, you did a Oaxaca.
Loved Oaxaca.
Speaking of Oaxaca, today's Pam's birthday. She asked me, and she did Morocco.
Happy birthday, Pam. She said,
"Hey, I told her I was doing Twit, and she's like, hey, that's my birthday. Give me a shout-out. So happy birthday, Pam.
We had lots of fun with her in Oaxaca.
Yeah, she's great. Yeah. But the gastronomic experiences, if you're unfamiliar with what we do, is that these are based on the places that we have lived extensively. And so Amira has deep relationships with winemakers, with food visionaries of all kinds. And we take people around to meet them and to experience things in a way that no tourist ever could. So,
I'll vouch for that. It was amazing.
Yeah.
And if you're a Club Twit member, there's a great conversation with Mike in America that I did last month.
That was a lot of fun.
In the Twit Plus feed. That was really fun. You can listen to that too. Get a better idea of all of this. Highly recommended. Mr. Daniel Rubino, it's such a pleasure having you on the show. It's been a while. I'm glad you're back with your fancy camera and your superb bokeh. Unbelievable. Really, look how good that looks. Doesn't that look good?
Amazing.
Executive editor, Windows Central. Plug something.
You've got the podcast every Friday, 1:30 p.m. on our YouTube channel at Windows Central. And we got a bunch of content there. But other than that, follow me on Twitter and at Windows Central, where I post pretty regularly.
Absolutely. WindowsCentral.com. What's the name of the podcast?
Is it just the Windows Central podcast?
Okay, so if I search for that, I should.
And we also have a gaming. If people are into gaming, we do have our Xbox 2 podcast. You know, so
I will
we have
be listening to that.
Gaming is very huge now in Windows Central. Yes. But gaming is massive.
I finally got an Xbox Series X a couple of weeks ago, thanks to
Anthony. Slowly coming back in stock.
Yeah. So I'm all excited about that. Nice, Windows Central. Thank you, Daniel. It's great to see you. Thank you so much, Doc Rock, the doctor of rock and roll. He's a community manager at Ecamm, which is great software everybody should use. You could follow him on his YouTube channel, youtube.com/DocRock. What do you talk about on Doc Rock channel?
I'm trying to teach people who are getting into becoming content creators to get out there and start doing it, because I believe that when we share our stories and we tell, you know, like what sort of what Mike and his family is doing, when you get people to tell their stories, you help pick other people up, you know, like just like today, right? We're out here, we're talking tech, we're having a good time. And then, you know, somebody comes in from UK and lets us know they're okay. We all feel better, right? That simple stories like that can just change your life. And so now I'm trying to teach people how to get into content creating as a way of, I guess, letting more people in the world to see other people in the world. So then you understand that everybody's just people.
I am such a big believer in that. Yep.
100%. You know what I mean? I think if the more we know about our outside world, the better we can behave as all people in this process. So as a traveler like Mike, I think that's what started me on my mission. And that's what it is.
Yeah, Doc's one of the great people in the world. And there's actually a picture of him without his hat on the site. I can't believe it.
So. What?
I've never seen him without his hat.
Here, okay, look.
No. Do you use argan oil on the head as well as the beard?
Nothing comes out of that head except heat. It looks like a bad lawn when it's growing in a couple of blank spots. And yeah.
No, you look good. And it is really always a pleasure to have all three of you. Three great friends on the show. Thank you to Daniel and Doc and Mike. And thanks to all of you who tune in and watch. You can actually watch us do this live at live.twit.tv. It's usually about 2:30 p.m. on a Sunday afternoon. That's Pacific time, 5:30 Eastern, 21:30 UTC. There's live audio and video at live.twit.tv. If you're watching live, our IRC channels heat up during the live shows, so it's a good time to visit irc.twit.tv to join the fun. We also have a Discord channel for the Club Twit members. After the fact, on-demand versions of every show we do are available at our website, twit.tv, including, I might add, that YouTube channel where you can watch every show. There's audio and video. Best way to watch, so probably find a podcast client, whatever suits your interests, whatever speed you like to listen, you can subscribe and get it automatically the minute it's available. If your podcast client allows for reviews, please leave us a 5-star review. After 17 years, There's some people have forgotten we exist. So let them know. We're still standing. Rust never sleeps. thank you so much for joining us. And as I have said, for 17 years, actually 16 years and 51 weeks, another twit is in the can. We'll see you next week for our anniversary show. Bye-bye.
Doing the twit.
Doing the twit.
All right.
Fun. This was a good way to celebrate.
Yes.
This was excellent.
Leo, somebody just reminded me, and I'm so bummed that I forgot. I wanted to send some happy thoughts out to Justine.
Oh, she's recovering well. Let's do that right now. So yeah, I did not know. My wife leaned over. She said, you know, Justine was in the hospital for 5 days.
Yeah.
What happened, Doc Rock?
She has a rare condition. The word is too fancy for me to remember, but she just got sick, and then come to find out she has some rare condition that's going to require, you know, some maintenance throughout the rest of her time.
Oh, we love Justine.
Check her out, her ID, but you know her. She went and told everybody on IG what's going on.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was a blood clot. That's what it is. Thank you, PC guy. The 808 messed me up because I went, Hawaii, but then
they call it Paget-Schroeder syndrome.
That's the one, Paget-Schroeder.
Paget, I know. The weird thing is she might have to have a rib removed.
Yes.
Which is bizarre. But anyway, Justine, we all love you, and we hope you're feeling well. I'm glad you're getting good medical care. And yeah, she's on Instagram and talking about it at iJustine. So, yes, iJustine has been a friend of the network for almost 17 years, and we wish her all the best. Get well soon. We love you, Justine. Very good. I'm glad you brought that up. It's weird. Did she talk about how you get it or where it comes from?
I don't know. You know, I just happened to be looking at the chat, and then Keith512 reminded me, and I was like, oh, yeah, I meant to do that anyway because, yeah. So, you know, just – I was talking to some people the other day, and I got to go shoot with Sidney DeYoungzong when I was in San Diego. And as you know, he works with his sister. So him and Jenna do some stuff together. So it's a trip that our space is so small, right? Even though, like, I think people watching us assume our space is really big,
right?
Because we do all the podcasting and blogging and we're all over the place. But our space is really small. So we end up running in relatively tight circles. You know what I mean? Like, just hearing that she was sick, and it's just like, oh, no. Like, that's somebody that we literally watch grow.
Well, she's so young. She shouldn't be sick. You know, it's just sad that an old guy like me is perfectly healthy and she's in the hospital is not right.
Yeah.
So I'm volunteering to take your place. She was in the hospital for 5 days. The blood clot in her shoulder, I'm glad they caught it, traveled to her lungs. And she may have to have a rib removed for some reason. I'm not sure why that would be. So get well. I guess she's home. But, boy, that's scary. That's scary.
It's crazy.
She had a sore shoulder for several days. Didn't do anything about it. But then it got so bad she couldn't raise her arms. So she went to a local hospital. Thank goodness they saw something going on. They wanted to know more. Sent her to a larger hospital. The clot is still not cleared, according to our chat room.
So we'll send her some positive thoughts. Send her some aloha. Hope she gets better.
Yeah. Yeah. She's a great person. All right. Thank you, guys. Have a great evening.
Mahalo.
I've kept you long enough. Good God knows.
Good to see you guys.
We're going to hold out for 3 hours, but I decided to be easy on you. Have a great one, Daniel.
Hello.
All right, you too. Take care.
Take care.